gavel.
You
want to get the hour of 12 o'clock having arrived, we will call the tax committee meeting to order. We are going to, even though we do not have a quorum, we will be working off of what was House File 1049 that in Ways and Means was rolled into Senate File 887. So my motion will be when we actually have a quorum to move a Senate File 887 to the General Register. Chairman Gunther, welcome to the Tax Committee. And members, I'm going to be, or I should say member. Oh, no, there's members. We got a few here. That's great. What we'll be doing with the presentation, and to Chair Gunther, if you could please concentrate your remarks on the tax portions only. That the tax, and I'm going to be very clear about that, that we're looking at the tax issues only. So, Chair Gunther, if you could please present Senate File 0887. And if the room could quiet down just a bit here so we can hear Chair Gunther's presentation on the tax issues only. Chair Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. The tax portion of this bill is basically the Douglas Johnson Fund, and where this committee takes to meet its targets, $60 million from that fund. We are called into the tax committee. There were a few fees that we figured out that are inconsequential, and the Senate took care of them in the Senate file. However, the Senate treatment of the Douglas J. Johnson Fund is different than ours is. They are simply borrowing the money and paying interest on it. We're taking it. And that's basically just the situation.
Okay, from what I understand, Chair Gunther, that's one tax provision, but for members, we have another tax provision that I'd like Deed to come down and visit about. And also, Chair Gunther, what kind of fees are we looking at in this bill? If you could just kind of go over the fees, and I'd like Deed to come down to discuss what this bill does to the Angel Investment Tax Credit. Do we have anyone in the audience from Deed? Okay. We will go to Chair Gunther first to visit with the committee about the fees. Then we will go to the gentleman from Deed. I would also like to ask at this point, is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on behalf of this bill or with concerns regarding the bill?
Okay.
Okay, so it looks like we're going to be working with committee members here at this point only. So, and is anyone here from the Department of Revenue if we have any technical questions? Where am I? Oh, Mr. Cummings. And okay, welcome to the Tax Committee. Gentlemen, Chair Gunther regarding fees, and then to the gentleman from Deed.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, the fees are billing permit surcharge, Section 8. Combative Sports Commission is Section 16, and the plumber bond fee is Section 23, and the Dolly license cleanup, continuing ed, signed contractors, bond, and manufacturing housing inspector municipal inspections on the non-covered area, Section 55, and that with an Angel tax credit.
If you could please state your name for the record, please, sir, and who you represent.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Nelson. I work for the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development, and I run the Angel Tax Cutter Program.
Welcome to the committee, sir. If you could please tell us about the provisions in Senate File 0887 regarding that issue, please.
Mr. Chair, there are three minor changes to the program, and let me first state sort of where these changes came from. In January, I had a number of businesses, investment funds, and investors contact me regarding some changes that they'd like to see to the program that would make it more effective and more efficient, and in some cases, less confusing. The first change actually is regarding the fact that in the program, all employees of a business must make a certain minimum wage, which is 175% of the poverty level for a family of four. Within days of the program launching, I had a number of businesses that called me and said, you know, we have a couple interns here. Do these interns also have to earn this $18.55 an hour? And the answer to that question was yes, all employees must earn that $18.55. And they said, well, then to qualify for the program, we're going to have to let these people go. And that wasn't the point of the bill. The bill is supposed to be creating jobs. So what we're doing for the first change is creating a lower minimum wage for interns and creating a definition of an intern. Try to keep it very strict so that these are either students or recently graduated students that only work for the company for a very limited amount of time. And working with Representative Mahoney, we came up with an alternative minimum wage that would be 175% of the federal minimum wage. And that turns out to be about $12.69 an hour as opposed to $18.55 an hour. And
the Mr. Nelson, if you could please hold that thought. I don't mean to be rude here. I just am. I will officially call the House Tax Committee to order. Representative Gottwalt moves the minutes of March 23rd, 2011. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The chair will move the unofficial engrossment of Senate File 0887. And just to bring members up to speed, the House file will substitute into the Senate file in the Ways and Means Committee. So we'll be working off the unofficial engrossment, members, that you should have in your packet. So, and the motion will be to move this bill to the General Register. Thank you, Mr. Nelson. If you could please continue.
Sure. So that was, Mr. Chair, that was issue number one regarding interns, a lower minimum wage so that businesses can employ interns at a reasonable wage.
Representative Dabney?
Mr. Chair, under the test fire, and the author, I apologize, but I'm finding the House Research Bill summary on HF 1049, and if I understood what the chair just said, that's not actually the bill we're working on.
Representative Dabney, is the same language, but in Ways and Means, we substituted House File 1049 into Senate File 0887 since we had the Senate file. So we're working off the Senate file. But members, please use the House File, House Research Bill summary. That's what we're working off of. So that is the correct language.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Dabney,
will copies of the bill be forthcoming?
You should have them in your packet.
We're making more copies.
Okay, before we take any votes on the bill, everyone will have copies.
It'd just be nice to be able to follow along.
Why don't you give this mine?
Thank you.
I never
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate
anyways.
That.
Goodbye. Okay. Got one? I guess I'll take it back. It probably would look good at least if I had a bill here. Okay. Representative Dabney, we okay? Okay. Mr. Nelson, if you could please tell us more about the Angel Investment Tax Credit.
Mr. Chair, issue number two that we're seeking to resolve in this amendment is that there's an inconsistency in the Angel Tax Credit program. For a business to qualify under the program, it can't have raised more than $2 million in equity financing. However, also in the program, using the Angel Tax Credit program, it can raise up to $4 million in investment that qualifies for the credit. What this really ends up being is a timing issue, in that in year one, a business can get certified if it's raised less than $2 million. Then they look at the program and they go, okay, now we can raise up to $4 million using the program. Well, if they don't get all that way up to $4 million by year two, they might come back in year two, seek to get recertified. But if they've raised $2.1 million, now they're over the limit, can't get recertified, and can't use the rest of the credit. So we're trying to simply reconcile the fact that there's this $2 million, $4 million. Before Representative Gunther's committee, we had a number of testifiers of businesses that fell into that timing trap, didn't realize that there was a difference there. And what we're seeking to do with the amendment is simply make both numbers $4 million, that a business can raise up to $4 million and qualify for the credit, and raise up to $4 million using the credit. Issue number three is regarding investment funds. We had a last-minute amendment to the bill last year that requires that all persons, all investors, and all fund members that are going to participate in the program be natural persons. And what is a natural person? It means if I pinch myself hard enough, I bleed. It's not a corporation. It's not a partnership. It's not an LLC. You must be a natural person. And the reason, I believe, for that provision is that sort of the concept behind angel investing is that companies are not just looking for money from angel investors. Angel investors are usually people with experience in business, and businesses are looking, and we want businesses to receive the guidance and mentoring from the angel investors. So that, I believe, was the reason behind having a natural person provision in there. That change, however, did affect a number of investment funds. And so what we're seeking is a change that would allow an investment fund to be made up of natural persons and non-natural persons. However, only the natural person members of that fund would qualify for the credit. We recently came out with an angel tax credit report. Part of that report showed that we were not using the program to its fullest degree in greater Minnesota. One of the issues that we have is I know in southern Minnesota, there's an investment fund of which the Southern Minnesota Initiative Fund is a member of that fund. Because the initiative fund is not a natural person, that fund could not participate in the program at all. So this change would allow investment funds that have non-natural persons to participate in the program, but again, doesn't change the fact that only natural persons can receive the credit. So those are the three changes. Interns, the $2 million, $4 million inconsistency, and a slight changing the wording regarding funds. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Okay. What we'll do, I have some members who would like to ask some questions. So what we'll do is we'll ask a couple questions, but then I think we should go to amendments. Then we can discuss the bill. After the amendments are done, we can have all the time we need until, what's floor session, 4:30? So we're not pressed for time here, so we should be able to have a good discussion here. Representative Downey and then Runbeck. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a quick question on the provisions of qualifying companies on the angel investment tax credit specifically. I know FDA approval processes are much more lengthy these days because, and I don't know all the details, but somehow you can't leverage previous FDA approvals for years. You kind of got to go all the way back to the beginning and do all of the almost the seminal FDA approval process start to finish. And then I also heard from a couple of constituents that they have, I think they're calling them kind of STEM technologies, or it's not maybe the lead time of a pharmaceutical development, but other kinds of medical technologies that take a long time to develop. And I'm wondering whether or not any consideration has been given to changing the rules a little bit so those types of companies who have really long lead times in their kind of life cycle, getting through that angel stage, whether extending some of the time frames might be possible to include those types of companies that are facing those issues now, or if that's if I'm even maybe misunderstanding the applicability of the angel constraints to the circumstance I just described.
Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, the program currently has a time limit for businesses that they can't have been in operation more than 10 years. It didn't come to my attention earlier this year when we were coming up with these amendments that was an issue that faced companies that we were dealing with. I could see where potentially it could be an issue for some companies if it's taking them longer than 10 years. We do sometimes have workarounds for that, in that a company can create a subsidiary company, and if that's a new subsidiary, it is a new company, so it's starting at year zero, and then it has 10 years that it could participate in the program.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, thanks. That's a perfectly fine answer, and I apologize. I have been meaning to get a hold of you and pursue some of these potential amendments for a long time and just haven't gotten to it, but maybe that's something we can work on, and it could be even subsequent to the omnibus bills that are moving through here today. And then a second question, if I could, Mr. Chair.
Certainly, Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nelson, the report that came out showed a fairly limited number of jobs having been created. I know the program wasn't even fully online, I don't think, until last fall. And if you covered this and I was just late, I apologize, but briefly, are you looking at the program as being on track in terms of the activity out in the market and the kind of jobs that are being created given the very, very early stage that we're at? Are you seeing that we're kind of on par with where other states might have been when they introduced their program, or do you think we're behind or not meeting these targets?
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, I think there's a great many of people that had concern about the job creation numbers that we came up with our first year. I think everyone realizes that the program was just passed last year, signed by the governor in April 1st. We launched the program in July. There's always some startup time. I'd have to say the last 2 months of the year, November, December, were sort of our critical years in terms of critical months, in that those were our busiest times. That was, seemed to be when all the investment was taking place. We measure jobs by when a company gets certified. They obviously send us an application. We ask them how many people work for the company. At year's end, on December 31st, they must file an annual report. We then ask them, well, how many people work there now? So it was a very short period of time, considering that a great number of businesses got invested or became certified in November, December, and then within weeks we're asking, well, how many people have you hired? I think most people realize it just doesn't happen that way. I think the other most important part, and I actually learned this sitting at Representative Gunther's committee hearing when we had a number of business people speak about the program. They said in the nature of the types of businesses that we're working with, and we need to remember that the Angel program is really geared toward high-tech businesses, these businesses don't necessarily go out and hire people to work for them, for that company itself. As Doug Ruth from Earth Clean and Glenn Seeger from Twin Cities Angels and Brian Anderson from Cache Financial pointed out to the committee, what we do is we take in the money via the investment, which then earns the Angel tax credit, and we spend all that money. We spend that money on R&D. We spend it on manufacturing in some cases, but we're not doing it in our shop. We're going to our neighbor down the street. We're going to other Minnesota businesses and purchasing these goods and services. So that money is being spent, that money is creating jobs. It's just that in our way of measuring it, the only way we have by looking at the company that qualified to the program is not being measured. One of the things that we're looking at is, well, rather than just looking at these companies, should we be perhaps using some sort of economic model whereby, and as we reported in the report, $28 million was invested in 67 companies, and they probably spent $28 million. How many jobs did spending $28 million create when these are all sort of high-tech businesses, all employing engineers and software developers, that type of thing? So that's something that we're going to try to include in the report next year.
Sort
of a lengthy answer, I'm sorry.
No, that, we appreciate that, Mr. Nelson. I'm going to take one more question at this point, then we're going to go into any amendments, and then once we see what the bill, I'll give a third reading, and then we'll figure it from there. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my questions are probably in the same vein as Representative Downey's, but how are you promoting the program, number one? How much do you expect in tax credits to flow through in this tax season? And are any Minnesotans, you know, benefiting from the tax? I mean, the investors, are they Minnesotans or are they from around the country?
Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck. Sort of work backwards on your questions. We have, our program is unique in the country. It is a refundable credit, meaning that if you have no Minnesota tax liability, you still can use that credit and you get a refund from the Department of Revenue. What that means is that you don't need to be a Minnesota resident. You don't need to have any Minnesota tax liability. Therefore, we are pulling in dollars from around the country, and in fact, in 2010, had a number of foreign investors. We view that as an extremely great positive for the state of Minnesota. We are more than happy to import capital from other states and other countries.
Representative Runbeck?
Could you repeat your other question, please? I think just curious how you're promoting it. I mean, that seems to be always an issue with new programs spawned by government. I mean, no one hears about them because, of course, it requires extra money to promote them. But yeah. How are you finding you're getting the word out?
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Nelson,
Representative Runbeck, what we have done is we have worked with the press quite a bit, so there's been a lot of press coverage of the program. We've notified economic developers throughout the state so that they are knowledgeable about the program. Last year, the commissioner and the director of the Business and Community Development Division did a roadshow around the state where they talked about the program. And we do outreach. I've worked with Life Science Alley and have done a presentation that is now available out on a website for people to go look at. I know the director, Bob Isaacson, of our group, was just out in Slayton, Minnesota, speaking to a group out there about the program. So it is a bit of a learning curve. We're also in collaboration with a number of other organizations, as I said, the Life Science Alley, the BioBusiness Alliance, and a new group that is just starting up, a nonprofit organization called the Minnesota Angel Network. What they are going to be doing is facilitating doing some facilitation between businesses and angel investors. And they have offered to provide on their website a place for all businesses that have been certified in our program put information about their businesses so that angel investors can find them.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Okay, what we're going to do now, a couple quick ones before amendments. Representative Erickson and Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nelson, how much private money then has been invested so far through the input of what you've just told us, whether it's someone who's from Minnesota or otherwise?
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, the investment made by angel investors pursuant to this program was $28 million in 2010. They do receive a 25% tax credit, so the credit amount being paid out in 2011 for those 2010 investments is about $7 million. But overall, $28 million was invested in small emerging businesses in Minnesota because of it.
Representative Erickson?
That was good.
Okay, and members, we'll go to Representative Lincheski, then I would like to get to amendments. And Mr. Nelson, you may not know this, but you're sticking around for the rest of the meeting because there may be more questions. I'd just like to get an amendment so we can see the bill as what we'll actually be finally voting on. And then if Mr. Nelson and the Department of Revenue folks would stick around to answer questions, that'd be great. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I did just want to tell you that those of us who are from the suburbs, you know, unlike the folks who stay here during the session, who just, you know, go off to where they live in St. Paul, some of us have to drive home. And I want to thank Representative Mazerall. I was having car trouble, and he drove me home. And Representative Bill's
I'm
here.
Charge.
Well, he didn't. He's a good Bloomington, you know, state rep. But Representative Bill's had a flat tire on the way home last night. So so we want some sympathy in the suburbs from this committee. For one.
I feel your pain.
But Mr. Chair,
yes,
I did just want to ask you before you start amendments. I actually have if we're going to be doing tax credits in a jobs bill, then I will have a number of amendments and a number of questions. But, Mr. Chair, I think the simple solution to avoid a lot of the amendments is to strip all the tax items out of this bill. It's nice we're hearing them, but they don't belong in the jobs bill. And, you know, what you can do is move to delete the sections, and this bill can be on its way. And I would encourage you to do that. You realize if these provisions stay in the bill, even if they change, you know, all tax amendments are germane on the floor. So we'll have, you know, omnibus tax bill day two. So, you know, I hope you will think long and hard about why we would have any of these provisions in the jobs bill. I will tell you, Representative Junkie was incensed that when he brought his ag bill through with a tax credit, the committee, rightfully, bipartisanly, stripped it out. That the tax credit, whether it's changing a current one or not, does not belong in this bill. And I hope if you're committed to keeping these tax provisions in the bill, including the others that we'll spend time on today, I think we'll hear all these amendments again on the floor plus more. But is there any interest in you entertaining? I have an amendment that I could just delete the tax provisions. We could vote the Gunther bill to the floor.
Well, Representative Lincheski, I'll be deferring to the chair of the bill before us first, but I was just wondering if Representative Bills taught your class this morning.
Yes, I did.
You did? Wow. I'm impressed. No, and actually, I don't know what Representative Gunther is going to say, but but I'm hoping he wants to keep these tax provisions in here, because I was somewhat distraught 2 days ago during the tax bill that I introduced it, and I didn't get to talk for about 10 hours. So if we need to talk about tax policy again, I'm more than happy to do it. But we'll just see what the chair would like to do. I understand what you're saying. In all seriousness, I understand exactly what you're saying. But I haven't conferred with the chair, and I'd like his thoughts on it first. But I'd be, at this point, I would be looking at not taking it out and going to the floor with the amendments. But I'd like to hear what the chair says first, and then you still have the floor, Representative Lincheski. Representative Chair Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Lincheski. This is part of my targets, and I am going to work to uphold my targets for the committee that I was given.
Representative Lincheski.
Well, Mr. Chair, you can give Representative Gunther his target. I mean, that, you know, you have the power to do that. You can make up his target for him. And I appreciate that you want to ask the chair of the Jobs Committee if he wants to carry a tax bill, but, you know, and he would like to. But, Mr. Chair, the power lies with you. And I don't know, you know, I think you're in a tough spot here, Mr. Chair. If your leadership is telling you other finance chairs, not tax chairs, get to carry tax provisions, I mean, the best you can do is fight it, I guess, privately. But this committee can publicly vote to not allow tax provisions in other bills. You know, I will tell you, Representative Broad was vigilant in ensuring that no tax provisions were in any other bills, because she knew she could offer 50 tax amendments on the floor that day. And, you know, we'll be able to do that, too, on this bill. But I think the better policy is to take them out. And if we believe the changes are good, then we should put them in the omnibus tax bill. And that's where they should be. You know, I don't support that. Certainly the what's happening in the Douglas J. Johnson Fund. But if this group and the chair of the committee wants to, you know, own that, then that's part of the process. But I really think we'll save a lot of time here, and then a lot of time on the floor again. You know, I think the thing we have to be concerned about, Mr. Chair, just thinking about the philosophy here, if this chair can do tax credits, why can't Chair Abler start doing health care credits? Why can't, you know, any chair start doing tax credits? And why can't any chair start taking people's property taxes and funding things with them? So, you know, it's a slippery slope. I think you've done a good job to date of stopping that, you know, that we talked about in January, that finance chairs, you know, they don't want to make their targets the way they should, which is to cut. So, you know, you just heard it. Well, I have to cut something else. Yep, that's right. And that's what people ran on, that we're going to cut. So, you know, otherwise we're going to raise revenue in a different way, not even in the revenue bill. And I think that's the problem that people have with this sort of process. So, you know, Chair Beard, I was really disappointed to see that Chair Holberg removed the tax provisions in his bill, and then he returned them on the floor. I don't think anyone can argue that's a good process. I think it's a new way to get around the tax committee that I think you as the chair in this body, you know, not in the Senate, but in the House, you are the number one person who can lay down the law on tax bills being carried in other people's bills. And I think your own members would just support you on that. I think they wanted to be on the tax committee so that tax bills are carried in this committee. And I think no matter what we do with the angel credit, and as we get into it through the amendments, if it leaves with an ounce of that credit in the bill, then we have another tax day on the floor. So, you know, I guess you're going to go forward and start amendments and think about it, but I think the whole process would be avoided if we took the tax items out of the Gunther bill and then voted it out of the committee.
Thank you very much, Representative Lincheski, for your points there, and the points are well taken. I'm not prepared this time to take those out. I haven't gone through with really anyone else on the impacts. I understand exactly what you're saying. One point I would make is that's why the bill's here now. So we're hearing the tax provisions. I understand that's not what you're saying. I understand that. But this, I would say if we could, and I'm not controlling the order of amendments, you can present them as you want to, but what I would prefer is that we have amendments. I'd like to hear the amendments and tax committee the way the bill is now. I'm not prepared to take it out now, but I hear you loud and clear. I really do. So that being said, I guess we'll have a little bit more, a few more comments first before we get into the amendments. And I would say at this point right now, I'm not prepared to recommend passing a vote to strip these things out, but I will be down in the corner as soon as we're out of here. So we'll go from there. Representative Anderson, Runbeck, and then Gottwald. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning. Everyone's bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. Representative Lencheski, I think, as you very well know, as chair, you had bills that didn't come to your committee that included fees, that included tax provisions, and that happened under your watch. So this is, you know, nothing new, except we're doing something different. We're actually having this bill come to this committee. So when you say that didn't happen under your watch, that's not the case. So thank you.
Mr. Chair? Did you use her name?
Yes.
Oh, Ursula Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you, you know, Representative Anderson, you just said on a public record, on the tape, that we had tax bills that didn't go through tax committee. Could you explain what those are?
Representative Anderson?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative, the member from Bloomington, how does that work? we've had this conversation before in tax committee, actually, and you said on public record, we had the Environment Finance Bill. And there's fees in there, and there are tax provisions in there, and everything else under the sun. And when I just did a quick search here, that bill did not come to the tax committee.
President Lencheski?
Well, Mr. Chair, that's not what I'm talking about at all. And in fact, I'm asking staff to bring the rules. You're talking about fees. I'm not talking about fees. I'm talking about a tax credit and a property tax item, and your rules are the same as our rules. And, Mr. Chair, I'm being impugned on the public record. So,
Lencheski, you have the floor.
Well, thank you,
members,
Mr. Chair.
If we could let Representative Lencheski talk without comment, please.
The fees, and when we get the rules, I'll read you the rule. And I am surprised that your side of the aisle has not used your own rule. The rule says, and maybe Representative Carlson has it in his folder, that on the issue of fees, and indeed the statute as it relates to a tax as a fee, gives exceptions to when a fee is not a tax. You may read it for yourself. We passed it out during the omnibus tax bill. Representative Krinke wrote the language, and he was very clear that fees that are exactions for service do not qualify. And those did not come here, and you have not had them come here either. And that is what is in state law. That is what is in the permanent house rules and the temporary house rules that your group is using. It's under rule point, I believe, 4.10 that says, in discussing a fee, the chair of the tax committee may consult with the chair of the Ways and Means Committee to determine if that fee falls into the tax versus fee statute. And Chair Davids and Chair Holbrook are doing that. And in Ways and Means, when the fees were addressed in this very bill, I said I didn't have an issue with the fees not coming here. And I still don't. So fees are different issues. What I'm talking about, and our rules have been followed without fail. And so I want to be clear when someone says Representative Lencheski is not following the rules, I think, you know, Representative Anderson, you don't understand the rules. I think you need to read the rule. So on the issue of fees, there are absolutely fees that in state statute and in the House rules do not have to come to the tax committee. What we've been asking is that the chair of this committee and the chair of Ways and Means Committee read the rule and apply the rule. And they have the authority to sometimes send them and sometimes not. Crystal clear, Representative Krinke wrote it that way so people could understand it, that when something costs a dollar and you raise a fee to pay a dollar for it, it doesn't need to come here. I've said repeatedly on these bills, I don't care about the fees. There is significant tax policy in the bill without the fees. And that was the case with Representative Beard. And so, Mr. Chair, we hate to get into an argument about this already, but I think it would do the whole committee... it would save just lots of time if I could get the rules and the statute again, and as the day goes on here with all the amendments, we can pass that out. So Representative Anderson and every other member of this committee and the public can understand what the rule is. The rule has absolutely been followed. There have been no tax policy changes that didn't come through taxes in the last 4 years on the House side. The Senate didn't follow the rule, absolutely. But the House did. And Mr. Chair, you are in charge of that. And the law and the rule says that anything that changes tax policy, it's not just raising revenue or cutting it, changing tax policy with a zero cost must come to the tax committee. And so fees are a separate issue. My complaints on represent, and I have no amendment to pull the Gunther fees out. I don't care if they stay in, never did. But we have a tax credit in this bill, and we have a major change in property tax policy in Minnesota, and those two provisions will allow that this bill on the floor, all tax amendments will be germane.
And I appreciate that, Ursula Lencheski. And as I said, this is a work in progress here. And, of course, we are in the Tax Committee with these issues right now. And so that's why we're here. Representative Anderson?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm going to disagree with the member across the table from me. When I look at the Environment Finance Bill, we're dealing with a dedicated sales tax money, and that didn't come to our committee. But I'll just leave it at that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Runbeck and Gottwalt, and I would like to get into amendments. And, of course, that's why this bill is here, because there are. That's why I voted to get it over here. And I was glad that Chair Gunther was gracious enough to come over here. So we are discussing the tax portions of the bill right now. Representative Runbeck and then Gottwalt. Representative Gottwalt.
Mr. Chair, I'll keep it brief. I'm willing to defer completely to the rules because that's what we operate under. But you know, this bill is before the tax committee, and if that is going to be used as an opening for applying a whole bunch of tax stuff in a long battle on the House floor, I just, you know, right now we're using a technicality to avoid discussing a really good set of provisions that need to be discussed in the tax committee. We're talking about tax provisions in the tax committee. I'm willing to defer to the rules, but just to correct the record too, we ran on living within our means and changing the trajectory of state spending. So I just want to make sure everybody understands that that's what we're here about. And I'm looking forward to hearing the bill and the amendments as well, but spending, you know, 20 minutes on a technicality, with all due respect to the rules, when the bill is actually before the tax committee with or without tax provisions, to me is a waste of time.
Well, I really do believe that Representative Lencheski's being just right up front here, and it says a bill with substantial impact on tax revenues or tax policies of the state must be referred to tax committee on taxes. That's where we're at. That's why we're here. That's one point. Point number two is if they stay in this bill, on the floor, we're going to have another tax day, and that's fair enough. I understand that. Members, that's what we're talking about here. This bill is properly before the tax committee. The question is, should those tax policies go in another tax bill or in the omnibus tax bill or somewhere? And that's the discussion I'll be having after this meeting, because if they are in there, then it opens up on the floor for any tax-related issue that would come before the full body. So I think that's where we're at. So if we could go ahead and, first of all, before we go into the amendments, and I whatever order you bring them is what we'll work with, and I would like to confer more with Representative Lencheski after the meeting also. Before we get in, Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, while you're on the rule provision, I just want to point out that you had to read that one paragraph.
Representative Carlson, if you please speak in the microphone, sir.
You had to read that one paragraph. I would say that this bill needs to go back now to Ways and Means. I know the chair of Ways and Means indicated that she didn't need to see it, but the rule, a bill reported by the Committee on Taxes containing a substantial fiscal impact must be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And when this bill was before Ways and Means, and the reason I think after our action today, rather than a referral to the House floor, it has to go to Ways and Means, is that when this bill was before Ways and Means, the only discussion was the tax provision and the fees. We never did get to the question of whether this bill was appropriate and could be certified, which is a requirement under the rules by the chair of Ways and Means. The only discussion we had was whether it would be referred to here because of the those provisions. So something for you to think about between now and final action, because your motion is to refer it to the floor. I would say under the rule, your motion should be to refer it to Ways and Means and then to the floor.
Okay, and thank you very much, Representative Carlson. I can let the committee know what I intend to do with that right now. If you read the rules, it says it must be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. It doesn't say when. It was referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. We had a full discussion there. The chair is very clear that she didn't want it back. So it's had a full hearing in Ways and Means, and I can't understand why she wanted it back. I mean, it says it must be referred to Ways and Means. It doesn't say that it has to go from taxes to Ways and Means. It says it must be referred to Ways and Means. It has been, and it was given a full hearing in Ways and Means. So that'd be my intention. We can have the votes on that as we go. Representative Bisgins, sir, and then I would... Oh, but before... Yeah, Representative Bisgins, and I have a little something I'd like to say on another issue, and then we'll get into amendment. Representative Bisgins.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Chairman, you are correct that the Chair of Ways and Means did state very clearly in committee that the bill would not be re-returned to Ways and Means, and so if there were questions on anything besides tax policy, members in Ways and Means knew it wasn't coming back. It was their responsibility to bring those issues up at the time it was in that committee.
Thank you for some business. Okay, before we get into the amendments, I would just like to welcome someone back to the tax committee, Karen Baker.
Oh. Yay. Yes, sir.
Karen, we missed you. We're very, very happy you're back here. And as I said on the House floor, and again on the House floor, when I thanked the members of this committee, I meant it. And when I said I thanked the fiscal staff and House Research, that they were considered the dream team. I got a note from, I think it was Mullery or somebody, saying something about which dream team is better, because I think the dream team was the 1980 Olympic basketball team. That was the dream team? Well, I'm thinking hockey. See, I'm just an old wrestler, and I kind of was battered throughout my life.
That was in the 70s.
And what was it, 92? Was any Syracuse players on that? Obviously not. So when I said the dream team, and to answer, I think it was Representative Mullery's question, I said this dream team is better than the other dream team. So that's the way it is. Okay, Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, you know, I don't know what I can do to fix this terrible bill up. So, you know, I mean, I could have an amendment to delete this section dealing with the Doug Johnson Fund, but I really would like to educate the committee, since a lot of misstatements were made regarding that in Ways and Means, and I don't know when you want to do that. I'm glad to see Ms. Baker back, and she does a lot of my taconite stuff, and I don't want to set her recovery back at all here, you know, but so I don't know when you want to do this, because I have a number of handouts to educate the committee. So
I would like to do is I'd like to get through all the amendments. It'd be my intention to get through all the amendments, go to you as long as you need to talk about. Why don't we do this? Why don't we do it this way? Why don't you offer an amendment, and then that'll open up so you can discuss and make your points on that. And I think that could be pretty simple, just probably an oral amendment, possibly even. Well, or you've got one.
I believe I just delete section 23. I think 823 amendment deletes it. There, you have it, Mr. Chair. Should I pass it off?
Okay, that we don't have it. So if we could pass out, if the pages could please pass out the first amendment. Representative, what's the number on the amendment?
823.
Representative Rukavina moves the 823 amendment. Representative Rukavina, it's being passed on. If you have the floor, sir, if you could please make your presentation on the 823 amendment.
Well, Mr. Chair, first of all, you know, I just want the public to know that Representative Gunter and I are good friends, and I don't know where he is there. Okay. And, you know, there are a lot of people that got some terrible targets this year, and he happens to be one of them. And, in fact, back in the 2001, I think Representative Gunter had this same finance committee, and he probably had to cut more than anybody else in general fund dollars and got a number of good programs from the Conservation Corps, if I recall, to who knows what. So, Representative Gunter, I'm not blaming you, although I think you could be a heck of a lot more fair than you are being. But members, you know, Representative Gottwald, you just said we ran on living within our means. You ran on, we don't have a revenue problem, we have a spending problem, but yet you want to take $60 million away from the hardworking people of the Iron Range, evidently just because of who we are and where we live and what we do for a living. Because there's no other logical explanation. Members, in Ways and Means, I want you to look at this chart so I can explain it again. This is a chart of, and it's a visual for you because a picture's worth a thousand words. And I'm not that smart, so it makes it look good for me. Representative Downey, you see that big red pink line there, whatever it is? That's a $721 million endowment, almost every penny of that, about 85% from iron ore and about 12% from timber sales, came from northeastern Minnesota. And the next chart, members, is a permanent university fund, because our permanent university fund is there because we have a land-grant college, and they were given land when we became a state. And that's worth $355 million. And then there's a new one called the Iron Range Scholarship, which is a statewide fund, and I'll tell you how many of your students from Representative Bills to Representative Loon are getting a scholarship because of the hard work of the people of the Iron Range every year. This money goes out every year to you. I'll tell you how much your school districts get. And I pass this out to the press, and I pass it out to Ways and Means, and people still don't get it because look at this little handout I gave you of the press or the news story on what we did last night until 3 in the morning. Turn to page 2. I highlighted it. Page 2 says, charter schools, many of which are in the metro area, would see an increase in funding or a change in the law that lets them benefit from government-owned land proceeds. Now, that sentence should read, if the press, you know, could get educated, and I don't know what's the matter with them, the sentence should read, lets them benefit from the benevolence of hard-working Iron Rangers. Because that's where this is this fund. And every year, Representative Gottwall, you're shaking your head, St. Cloud gets $288,000 this year. The Speaker's District gets, Osseo and Wayzata, $920,000. Minneapolis, my friends from Minneapolis, who some of them don't like mining, $1,252,636,000. Representative Lesch, St. Paul, $1,250,276. Every school district in the state. Then when it comes to our school districts, the people live there, the ups and downs of mining, we get 17,000 in Mountain Iron Buell and maybe 20,000 in Nashua, Kewaunton, and that's fine. We love sharing. Let's go to the next list on here, the Permian University Fund. 1,500 employees a year at the University of Minnesota either get a full check or a partial check from the interest off of this money. Every year this happens. Did I forget to mention that this year $28 million more dollars is going in the corpus of this fund from Mintac in Mountain Iron because they're mining the kids' ore? And because Representative Anzeltz is mining the ore in Kewaunton, there's going to be about $10 million more going into the blue fund this year. And about half of that will go into the green fund so your kids can get more scholarships at Crookston, Morris, the Twin Cities, and Duluth campuses. So, 1,500 employees here, mostly in my friends' districts right here around the table that live in the metro area. Those 43 endowed chairs that bring in $600 to $800 million a year, 22 of them, 22 of the 43, endowed by the people of the Iron Range. You know? Scholarships, let me get into that. Representative Bills, my good friend, you benefit the most I could find at the table. You know, Representative Bills, let me see what you got here. 12 kids in Apple Valley, 16 kids in Eastview High School, and 19 kids at Rosemount, getting $2,000 a year for 4 years. $8,000. 51 kids getting $8,000 because of the hard work of the people of the range. Representative Loon, Representative Knuth, 20. You don't like mining, but I'll bet you those kids love that scholarship. You know? Representative Myra, 25. Representative Myra, 25 kids getting $8,000 over 4 years because of the hard work. Speaker Zeller's got 31. I could go on and on here. Every single one of you. And so all we got out of this, $1.1 billion plus dollars in endowments for all of you, and we got $122 million after 125 years of mining, and you want to take half of it away from us, and you people in leadership should be ashamed of yourself for what you're doing. You should be ashamed of yourself. You're not going after anybody else's money. Nobody else's money. And you can live. You don't have a spending problem, though. Or a revenue problem. There's a spending problem. There is a spending problem. You got to spend other people's money to meet your target. I don't know what we did to piss you people off. I really don't know.
Representative Rukovina.
Excuse me, that's not a swear word on the range. I don't know, you know. Excuse me for that. To tick you people off. Representative Gawal, do you want to respond to me? You're shaking your head the whole time I'm talking. Shake your head and respond to what I'm saying, because everything I've told you is true. Every year. Every year, 1,500 people at the U. Every year, the Dow Chair is bringing in $800 million for the economy. Every year, St. Cloud and Minneapolis and Edina getting money for their school kids. Every year, your own constituents. I can even name them because UMD gave me the names. Do you want to hear the names of the students going to UMD that are getting a scholarship? I can tell you. So, you know, this year, the scholarship fund, which I'm proud that I actually came up with this idea because I diverted a little money to the NRI up in Duluth and that at the time. But, you know, $2,800 given out this year in scholarships, and it's growing. It'll be $4 million at endowment bigger. So what did we do? And Representative Gunther, why do we have to take the $60 million, a little bit of trust we set up for ourselves, which is less than 10% after 125 years of mining, than we give you every year? Why? Representative Anderson, you came up with some figures. You came up with some figures. Representative Gunther, I want to hear why we have to give and nobody else has to give in this state. You're right. You got a bad target. Unfortunately, the target is the people of the Iron Range. Why is that? Who can answer this question for me? Mr. Chair, can you answer it?
Representative Rukovina, are you asking?
I'm asking somebody to tell me why the Iron Range people, after all their hard work, after what they give every year, every single year, what they give to all of your constituents, why you have to take away half of our little endowment that we have.
Okay, before we go to Representative Gunther, I would like to amend the amendment to delete on page 1.1.
Mr. Chair.
Excuse me? Yeah, it's been moved.
Did I move the amendment?
Yes. And I'd like to amend the amendment, Representative Rukovina, to, on line 1.1, delete HFNO 1049 and insert
Senate file.
887. Senate file, unofficial, okay, and insert Senate file 887, and then it would read and then delete the word first and insert unofficial. So it would read, moves to amend SF 887, the unofficial engrossment. Any discussion on that? Hearing none, all fair, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment prevails. Chair Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Rukovina. Not only did I get a bad target, but as I remember last biennium, so did you. And I think the thing that you told me when I was chairman before, is this a jobless job bill? I could have said the same thing about yours. I was glad we had higher ed. I know you were a great supporter of that part of the bill. However, by accepting your amendment, we are officially putting DEED out of business, because if general fund money in DEED is just barely that much money.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukovina, you have the floor, sir.
Please explain. There's some rangers in the room today.
Representative Rukovina, the microphone, please.
Why do they have to pay the general? Why do we have to run DEED? We don't have a revenue problem, we have a spending problem. Why do the people of the range have to finance the Department of Employment and Economic Development?
Chair Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Rukovina, I didn't ask for this to be my target. However, just like you did when you were a chairman of the same committee, you had to go uphold your target. And I sensed and noticed many times a lot of frustration. You can count on me having that much or more.
I know, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Bob, I apologize to you. I don't mean to imply this is your fault, but you're carrying the bill. And you're the one that has to do the dirty work. And I did not, in either in my workforce side of my committee when I chaired it for 4 years, or my higher ed side, go after anybody's local property taxes to finance state government. I did not do that. And so I'll challenge anybody at the table or here in the legislature to tell me when I did. So the question is back to you then, Mr. Chair. Maybe you can help me. Why do the people of the Iron Range, if there is no revenue problem in this state, have to finance the Department of Employment and Economic Development? Mr. Chair, can you help me out? You're much smarter than me. You're much tougher than me. You're much bigger than me. And
better looking.
Well, and better looking.
The only thing I would agree to, Representative Rukavina, is that bigger.
Yeah.
Bigger. I'm going to defer answering the questions to the chair who has the bill before us. He's presenting his bill. I would defer questions to the chair, to the chair of the committee that has this bill. Representative Rukavina, you still have the floor, sir.
Well, Mr. Chair, I am asking you to answer why we have to be the ones to finance a state agency when no other area of the state has to use their local property taxes to do that. And you're chair of the tax committee. Maybe Representative Runbeck, if she would yield for a question. Because Representative Runbeck is chair of the property tax division, and maybe she could tell us if any other local property taxes are being plucked out of, you know, Circle Pines or Edina or anywhere else to pay for a state agency.
Representative Rukavina, I will go to Representative Runbeck, but to your first question, I don't have an answer for you. So that's why we're thank having you. The committee meeting. Representative Runbeck.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rukavina.
Please use the microphone.
I'm looking at what our challenge is, and I think everything is on the table. And so, and property taxes, certainly everything is on the table, and your fund as well. And just to clarify, Representative Rukavina, which is the equivalent to your property tax again? Is it the occupation tax or is it the production tax?
Representative
Rukavina. You've got two different streams.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, the occupation tax is the constitutional, passed in 1921 by the people of the state in a constitutional amendment, is the corporate income tax on minerals in the state of Minnesota. The production tax is in lieu of the local property tax. Occupation tax is a state general tax comparable to corporate income tax. The production tax is a cents per ton in lieu of tax for local units of government.
Representative Runbeck.
Mr. Chair, this very useful table here has been distributed. I wonder if it's possible to learn a bit more from perhaps Mr. Michaels or Ms. Baker. What is the situation with the fund? I mean, is it appearing that there's excess funds? I mean, it's not that they don't belong to all Minnesotans in some way, shape, or form. I would have to think that there's some amount of sharing that's been going on for years, Representative Rukavina. We're still paying, I think, aren't we paying LGA up there? Things like that. I mean, this is all
Mr.
kind
Chair.
Of commingled.
Mr. Chair.
You know?
Just a second. Representative Runbeck has the floor at this point.
Well, I'm Mr. Chair, I'm just looking for some sort of broad overview of really what we're looking at in the information that's
I
been
think that'd be
out
helpful. Mr. Michael, if you could make comments on the Runbeck question. And then I also have Rukavina has the floor, but then I'll go to Anderson and Downey. But Mr. Michael, first to the Runbeck question.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, just to go through this table that was passed out, and unfortunately, I have an updated table that has slightly better information in it. But if you look at the second column from the left, we'll just go through the columns so that you can. As Representative Rukavina indicated, the production tax is the cents per ton, and that abbreviation at the top where it says CPT, that refers to cents per ton. That's the production tax is the tax that the mining companies pay instead of an ad valorem property tax. And the rates that are indicated there are the cents per ton. So, you know, for 2010, they're paying $2.38 per ton of taconite that they produce. The next column, and this is the column where it's a little misleading, and I have a table that's more accurate after Representative Rukavina and I talked shortly before the meeting. He pointed out that the column that you have, which I had copied from the Department of Revenue's mining tax guide, is the statutory amount, but because of changes in production and changes in claims by the companies, that number, the actual number varies from year to year from what that amount is, and I do have an updated version that I can pass out if members want that. But that refers to the Taconite Economic Development Fund. Each of the mining companies qualifies to get a 50% essentially investment tax credit if they make qualifying investments in their operation during the year. And so, in effect, that dollar amount really reduces the burden on the mining company. And so then the next column shows the net tax in cents per ton of the production tax. And again, keep in mind this is all in lieu of the local property taxes. So if you, and I'll have this, the correct table copied so that you can have that. You can see, so that you can see the dollar amounts per ton that were paid. The next column.
Mr. Chair.
President Runbeck.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Michael, the cents per ton, that's something I haven't run across. So how do I read that? You know, in 2010, 207.9 cents per ton. What is that a dollar figure?
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, yes, that's right. So when you see 207.9, that means $2.07 and 9/10 of a cent per ton for each ton of ore that the company produces. Now, it's more complicated than that because the actual tax is based on as Representative is giving me the signal that this, that there's an averaging factor that is intended to sort of smooth out the revenue collection. So the actual tax obligation is based on the average of the previous 3 years of production. So when they have, I think it was in 09 that they had, or 08, one of the two, where they had very low, because of the recession, the demand for taconite pellets was down. The steel companies were simply not producing as much steel. And so the companies up there only produced 7 million tons of ore, but their tax actually was based on the sort of the 3 years, and so they didn't pay that much. But now that 17 million ton year is still in their formula, and so that affects their tax in 10 and 11 until it gets out of the formula, and that affects the collections. And, of course, these get distributed to the cities and counties and schools and towns on the range. The next column shows the occupation tax rate. This is the tax that mining companies pay instead of the corporate income tax or the corporate franchise tax. And the revenues from that tax go to the state's general fund. And then, as Representative Rukavina has indicated before, there's a constitutional provision that says 40% of it has to go to K-12 schools, and another 10% has to go to the University of Minnesota. And you can see for many years that rate was pegged to the corporate franchise tax rate, which is shown as in the next column. But in 2006, the legislature reduced that occupation tax rate from 9.8 to 2.45. So that's the rate that they currently pay. The base of the occupation tax is not exactly the same as the corporate franchise tax, and I can get into talking about that if someone wants to get into it. It's calculated based on sort of hypothetical profits rather than actual profits, and it's calculated on a separate company basis rather than on a unitary basis. The next column after the corporate franchise tax that's headed Taconite State Aid cents per ton shows there's this program that was instituted in 2001 that has the state paying general fund money into the taconite distribution formula. In part, you know, there, I think there are different explanations for why that was done can be, you know, talked about. But in part, it was stimulated by the fact that one of the companies went bankrupt and production slowed down, and that was a way to essentially hold that fund a little bit harmless from that. And in part, I think Representative Rukavina will tell you that this was also a way to offset reductions that were provided to the taconite companies to as part of the as sort of a similar treatment that CI Property got. And so you can see from that the amount of that taconite state aid is calculated on a cents per ton basis, just the way the tax is, and the distributions are made in exactly the same way that the production tax distributions are made. And currently that's being calculated at 22 cents per ton. So again, that amount of aid will go up and down with the amount of taconite production on the Iron Range. The next column shows the dollar amount of those general fund taconite aid amounts stated in millions of dollars. So when it says 12.97, that means in that year 12 million, and these are calendar year numbers, not fiscal year numbers. If you get into fiscal year numbers, they'll slightly different than that, but that's the 12 million in the first year. $12,970,000 of general fund aid was paid to the taconite distributions. And then the final column, just for a reference point, because the production tax is essentially the tax that the taconite companies pay instead of a property tax, shows what the state average effective tax rate was that was paid by CI Property. And again, you can see the effort by the legislature starting in 1997 to reduce CI Property taxes is reflected in that column, where it dropped from 5.7 in 97 to 5.12 and down to 4 and so forth. And you can see the effect of the state takeover of the education aid formula, which essentially reduced CI taxes, you know, quite significantly between 2001 and 2003.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. Representative Runbeck.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Then I don't see the Douglas Johnson Fund named here. I'm just wondering, where is it collecting from? Which pot?
Ma'am.
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, the amounts from the production tax and the state aid amounts are essentially go into a formula that allocates that money among cities, counties, school districts, townships, and the taconite credit, and a variety of other things, as well as at the very bottom of that distribution, money goes to the Economic Protection Fund, and then also that's called the residual distribution. Two-thirds goes to the Environmental Protection Fund, and one-third goes to the Douglas J. Johnson Economic Trust Protection Trust Fund. And so these monies from the second column from the left and then the second column from the right go into that distribution and filter out to all of those various different points. And so eventually some of that money gets down into those two residual funds.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Rukavina, you still have the floor. Then I have Anderson, Donnie, Marquardt, Bisgins.
Well, Mr. Chair, again, you know, I just want to emphasize that this is a local property tax in lieu of property taxes, and nobody else's local property taxes are being gone after, other than the fact that, yes, Representative Runbeck, we get LGA. Minneapolis gets LGA. Duluth gets LGA. Rochester, which has a huge property tax state, gets LGA. I don't know if Circle Pines gets it or not. St. Cloud gets a huge amount. Why didn't you go after their local property taxes then, Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, if the issue is that we got local government aid? Can anybody answer that? Representative Gottwald, do you want to answer that one, Representative Gottwald? You're commenting over there, so let's hear what you have to say publicly.
Mr. Chair, I think there's a long line ahead of me, actually.
Okay, we'll get to Representative Gottwald, too, here. Representative Rukavina, you have the floor.
I'm done. I'll wait.
And we'll, of course, come back to any members that have questions here. And just so we know, we have till about 4:15, and then after that we will meet after floor session tonight, if need be. Hopefully we can get this wrapped up. I think Rukavina's made his case here. So Representative Anderson, Downey Marquardt, Bisgins, Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if House Research can help me out with a little question, a couple of questions that I have. I think, Mr. Michael, I heard you say that we have general fund dollars then going to these different accounts. Can you tell me, so is it general fund dollars, state tax dollars, going to the IRRRB or the Douglas J. Johnson? How does that work? How much money is going, state general fund dollars, state tax dollars, going to these different funds? Can you, could you clarify that for me, please?
Mr. Michael?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, essentially that column, you know, that's that second from the right column shows the sum of the amount of monies that have gone into the taconite, you know, production fund distribution. The statute says you distribute that amount just like any other production tax amount paid by a taconite company. And so then there's this complicated distribution system that Representative Rukavina describes as Byzantine that, you know, says everything on cents per ton and so forth where that goes. As I said before, the remainder of that goes two-thirds and one-third to those two funds that are managed by the IRRRB. And in effect, you know, that money eventually filters down, and we requested the Department of Revenue to sort of redo and say what would have happened if if the state aid had not been there. And it's complicated because that distribution formula has guarantees in it, and some of them are escalated and some of them are not. It's not a really straightforward kind of thing. This morning, you know, shortly before committee, they had sent us some stuff tried to redo all of those calculations to sort of show how much of this general fund money ended up in the Doug Johnson trust fund, as opposed, you know, if that aid had not ever been paid. And the tentative number that we've had, I think Karen's going to have to call them back to confirm some of this stuff, but it looks like it's about $20 million as a result of that ended up in the Doug Johnson trust fund. But again, it's just, that's a number that we, you know, just got and haven't really been able to talk with them and confirm it.
Representative Anderson?
Okay, so let me just clarify, Mr. Michael. So when I'm looking at that second to the right column that says state aid, so that's state tax dollars, so all of the tax dollars that we all pay in, we've got $12.97 million in 2001, $7.95 million from state tax dollars. That's everything that everybody around this table pays, all of our constituents. That's state tax dollars that are going towards this effort, towards this fund, the Douglas J. Fonds,
no.
J. Johnson Fund.
No,
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Mike, members, please. Mr. Mike, please. Mr. Michael.
It's going towards these efforts, correct, Mr. Michael? And of that amount, you're saying that $20 million is to the Douglas J. Johnson Fund, is that correct?
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, the sum of those amounts is the total amount of state taconite aid that's been paid over that period of time, and that gets distributed just as if, yes, that's straight from the general fund, so it's, you know, from any source that goes into the general fund, and that money is distributed. One way to conceptually think about it is it's just like as if, you know, MNTAC had paid that money instead, or somebody else. And, you know, and then it goes through this distribution formula mm-hmm. so that it goes out to the cities and counties and so forth. But from what the calculations that revenue has done for us initially, it looks like had that not been there, had the legislature never done that, that then there would be $20 million less in the Doug Johnson Fund. I think that might be one way to think about that.
Okay, so
Mr.
Chair, Mr. Michael, so the bottom line is the Douglas J. Johnson Fund receives general fund tax dollars, so all the tax dollars that all of our area pays. Is that correct?
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, I think it's safe to say that in some years that's true, in some years it's not, because it all depends upon how this distribution formula works.
So it has at some point received general fund dollars. Okay, thank you.
Okay, Downey Marquardt.
Can I explain something to
no.
the members?
No, I'll put you on the list, however. You'll okay. be able to talk all you'd like, so if you want to write the notes down here.
I'll remember.
I'm sure you will. Representative Downey Marquardt, Bisgins, Gottwald, Rukavina. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Rukavina. I actually have been looking forward to this hearing all week. This whole Byzantine mechanism is just a big cloud to me, and so I'm glad we're at least parting the clouds a little bit here. That's maybe not even an aside. I think it's somewhat relevant to Representative Rukavina's overall point that somehow we're going after the range, and the range has been funding our kids and things. I just want to do a quick bit of education on the permanent school fund, the K-12 school trust fund. I think it's a slightly more complicated picture, and I don't even understand all the Byzantine underlying mechanisms of this thing either. But I passed out two handouts. Back when our state was organized, we actually set aside Section 16 and Section 36 of every township in the state. And in cases where those sections didn't work out well, it was a river or something that somebody already owned, there were some adjustments made. But the one-page map with the entire state of Minnesota, it might be a little hard to read in your black and white, but if you can see the little white dots all throughout the state of Minnesota, that's Section 16 and 36 that would originally have been deeded to the school trust lands and the fund, the dollar fund that gets generated from those trust lands. 1857, I think they were started. And the dark shaded boxes are what we have left. And it was really interesting. I went back and looked at amendments to the state constitution since 1857. And you can see all these events where we started to do things differently with Section 16 and 36. And what's happened is that over the years, we've either sold them or traded them or done different things. And over time, kind of the acreage has moved to the north and east up into the Iron Range. And a large part of that is because the DNR was managing the school trust lands, and they had a pretty high conservation ethic. And so a lot of this land, and Representative Rukavina, you can explain more of this when you get your chance in line here. But the lands have migrated. And I also had staff pull together this chart of the metro area that shows Section 16 and 36, what it originally existed as when the school trust lands were created. And you can see the kind of property that we once owned that was supposed to generate revenue for our schools. And I ask you to go back and read the Constitution and look at the dependency that was envisioned originally on these school trust lands to fund our schools, and the lack of revenue that's being generated for our schools, I think, compared to what was originally contemplated. Literally 1/18th of all land in Minnesota was granted to the school trust lands program. Members, if we hadn't made the moves we made, and I'm not going to condemn my ancestors here, but since 1857, we've moved all of that land up from the metro. I don't know, sold it, traded. I couldn't even tell you all the transactions that occurred. Had we not done that, and you look at the market value of that land, that school trust fund, that permanent school fund, wouldn't be worth $721 million. It'd be worth $32 billion. $32 billion. And we moved all that land up to the Iron Range in the Boundary Waters Canoe Area and all these places over the 150-year history of our state. And so you think about the revenue that would be generated from that today if that trust fund were really worth $32 billion. And somehow we've lost that. What's interesting, though, is that all of the mineral rights on that land that was originally deeded to the school trust lands still accrues to the state. Mineral rights don't ever leave the state. And so I don't understand the interaction between the mineral rights due to the state and the royalties that go into all these taconite funds. That's part of what I'd hope we'd be able to uncover a little bit here today. And Representative Rukavina, you can educate us on this. But I just want to make sure that people understand that this pink bar is not, and I grant you, Representative Rukavina, and you speak passionately about this, and I know how long and hard the people on the range have worked to do good things for that trust fund, and I think you and I are on the same side on this whole issue. But just remember that that pink bar originally was the land that was owned in the metro area that somehow all got shifted up to the north through various transactions. I'm sure Representative Rukavina will try to correct me. But I want to bring a little bit of context to that pink bar. And why that thing isn't worth $32 billion today, I don't know. We need to dig into that on the School Trust Lands Advisory Committee. But just a little bit of perspective on the pink bar. And then if I could, I just want to go a little bit further on the questions from Representative Anderson, if I could, with the staff. We don't have the number. Mr. Chair, can I ask Mr. Michael a question?
Certainly.
So we don't have the number from revenue, or we don't have the formula by which they derived it. We're just saying roughly $20 million in the Douglas E. Johnson Fund, or Douglas J. Johnson Fund, could be estimated to have come from general fund contributions. Is that right? There's nothing to support that?
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, the Department of Revenue did send us a spreadsheet, which, if this was handed out, it's the second page of this. That's a landscape document like that. Right. No, that's not right. It's on the very left corner of it says MS 298.285, that's the state aid appropriation. That's what it shows. It's the second page of that, right. Yep.
Mr. Michael?
And on that, it basically what those numbers show, and ignore the handwritten numbers below, that did not come from the Department of Revenue, and I think that part of this is why we need to talk to them more to find out whether this is correct or not. But basically, these columns show, so when you see looking under the environmental fund, there's the first column shows with state aid, this is the amount that was distributed to the environmental fund under this distribution system with the state aid that was paid. The next column shows without the state aid, and then similarly on the Douglas J. Johnson Fund, those are the same calculations. So you can see, for example, you know, if you look at production year number 2003, in that case, these calculations show that the Doug Johnson Fund would not, if there had not been state aid, it would not have gotten any money through this distribution, but because of the state aid, it got instead $755,772, essentially.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. Mr. Chair, you know, I'll just make a comment, and Representative Rukavina, I'm certain you got a lot of good points. I'm guessing you do. You've spoken passionately on it in Ways and Means, and now here, and I don't want to begrudge you that. It is good to kind of part the clouds and see some of the facts. But this whole Byzantine structure between state government and local governments always messes us up, and we never know where this money came from or who it belongs to or why it's there. And back when I was a programmer, this is a long, long time ago when I first got out of college, we called that spaghetti code, where you start with a computer program and you add something and you add something and you add something and you add something and you take something out and you move something and you combine something, and lo and behold, 20 years later, you look back and you can't even figure out how something moves through it. And at that point, you scrap it and you start from you start new and you build something that actually works and accomplishes your purposes. And I just feel like we're at a spaghetti code stage here, and I have no idea how we unwind this and determine what's fair. And Representative Rukavina, you could be 100% right. Representative Gunther could be 100% right. We have no idea. I mean, as best we can tell here, there's at least $20 million in that Douglas J. Johnson fund that came from the general fund. And, you know, when we have those kinds of pots of money and those unintelligible distribution schemes, pots of money are liable to be grabbed. And I think, you know, a lot of different people around this table could make different kinds of arguments as to whose pot should be grabbed by whom. And so what it comes down to is pure politics, and that's unfortunate. I think we'd be a lot better off if these mechanisms were cleaned up, and I wouldn't even know where to start on the taconite mineral stuff. But anyway, I think it just explains why this is such a tough conversation and why I'll support Representative Gunther. I don't know why we wouldn't be able to make that claim, and you know what, maybe we can straighten all this out and figure it out, and we can find a better way to do this in the future. But for now, it is what it is, and I don't begrudge Representative Gunther from making the claim that that general fund money could go to general fund purposes today.
Members, we may, this is a very interesting discussion. We may need to defer to a former member who is with us who may want to speak and take a vote on this. If we could welcome former Rep. Paul Coles.
Mr. Chair, who I might add is here today to support me because he always liked me. That's why he showed up.
He won't have a vote today. Okay, I've got Representative Marquardt next on the list. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I could talk about the inappropriateness and the bad policy of raiding the Douglas Johnson Fund, but like what I saw in the Property Tax Division report, there really hasn't been much rhyme or reason as to why we cut where we do. And Representative Downey just used the term peer politics. I maybe could use that also. So I think when we cut something, and then we work backwards to try to rationalize it, and I think we saw that also in the Property Tax Division. But I want to change subjects a little bit, and that is I want to talk about fiscal responsibility. And so I've got a couple questions of Representative Gunther and then some comments. So, Representative Gunther, this $60 million from the Douglas J. Johnson Fund, is this one-time funding or continual funding?
Chair Gunther.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Marquardt, one time.
Representative Marquardt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, if you were not to use this one-time funding of $60 million, what would have been your total general fund appropriations, which are roughly on line 393-394? It says $157.8 million. Without this $60 million of one-time funding, what would have been your general fund appropriation?
Chair Gunther.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Marquardt, that's all my accounts together. That's Minnesota Housing Finance, it's Dolly, it's IRRRB, and DEED.
Representative Marquardt.
A negative number, I think.
Yeah, I think, okay. Mr. Chair, I think what I'm getting at, maybe we can move to the 10th and final page of the spreadsheet, where it has the general fund impact. I guess that's the number I'm looking at. So, you know, you've got roughly $157 million of general fund impact.
Right.
But without the revenues you have, which is at least $60 million of one-time funding, if I'm reading this correctly, and maybe you can look at that last page if you would, Representative Gunther, it looks like...
Excuse me, Representative Marquardt, if we could keep the table chatter down, I'd really appreciate it because I'm trying to listen to Representative Marquardt here. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much. If you look at kind of that line 411, it says the net general fund, excuse me, about 408, net general fund impact, it says $81.5
billion. Chair Gunther?
I'm maybe not asking this.
Representative Marquardt?
The point, what I'm trying to get at is without the one-time funding, you know, what would you be able to spend? What would be the general net fund impact without the general, without that one-time funding?
1 minute. Chair Gunther, maybe we could bring Mr. Soderberg down.
That
That would be great.
Sir, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'm Ron Soderbergh. I'm with House Fiscal. Representative Marquardt, I think your question is, what would that number be if the $60 million would be out? Well, it'd be $60 million off that number, so it'd be $97 million.
Very good.
Representative Marquardt.
Mr. Chair, thank you so much. And, you know, and I think you can see that if you take all the revenues out on that line 408, it comes to $81.5 billion because you're using this revenue, which is most of one-time revenue. And I've heard a number of folks, in fact, someone gave a speech on the House floor during the tax bill, referring to our 29% increase in spending in this biennium over last biennium, and basically referring to a lot of the one-time shifts that occurred, that we moved from one biennium to the next. And then really the phrase was, we're spending much more than we can afford. And so, if you look at line 408, members, you're going from $81.5 million in House Fiscal 12 and 13, the House Fiscal 14-15 of $140 million. My calculation is that's not a 29% increase, which we heard some members criticizing and saying we're living beyond our means. This would be a 75% increase from one biennium to the next on the net general fund impact. And when we talk about fiscal responsibility, I have heard time and time again in this committee and on the House floor that we're not living within our means. We're spending more than we can afford because we're using one-time monies and just adding an increased burden down the line. And so, I guess, members, if you really want to live up to fiscal discipline, you should support the Rukavina Amendment. It takes out this one-time funding. If you want to change the trajectory of state funding, as Representative Downey just said in this meeting, if you want to change that trajectory, members support the Rukavina Amendment, which takes out this $60 million of one-time funding. Because by using this one-time funding, we are not changing any spending trajectory. We're filling it with one-time funding, and then we come back the next biennium, and we're spending the exact same amount of money. Members, there's no fiscal responsibility here. There's no fiscal discipline here. There's no living within our means here when we use one-time money. So for a moment, forget even where we're taking the money from. If we truly believe in fiscal responsibility and not shifting a burden onto the next biennium, you will support the Rukavina Amendment and take the $60 million of play money out that they want to use to beef up this budget, take that out so that the majority actually has to live within their means. And that's the point here. And so, members, please support the Rukavina Amendment if you want fiscal responsibility and discipline with this bill.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt, for your comments. Representative Gottwald?
Well, Mr. Chair, I hope everybody's listening. This is remarkable. I'm so pleased to hear you taking this approach, Representative Marquardt. I really hope people capture the soundbite of what Representative Marquardt just said. And I may even agree with you. You've got a point. But I hope that same point follows through when we're talking about these same issues on every other budget bill that we deal with this session. When we talk about the one-time money that we take that simply floats unsustainable spending increases, I want to hear you and your caucus talk about that on the House floor and be honest with Minnesotans about it. So, Representative Marquardt, I appreciate the education on this, and you know what? I think you're right. But this needs to follow through. It's just interesting that we bring that argument when it suits us and we deflect it when it doesn't. And I really hope we have honesty around this issue as we go forward with the state budgeting process. So I appreciate you bringing up that fact, and I'll keep that in mind as we vote on this.
Representative Rukavina, and then we will go to vote unless anyone else would like to make any comments. Okay, Representative Rucavina, you have
Chair,
the floor.
There ought to be a law against me having this much fun educating you. There really should be. But anyway, okay, I'm going to start with my good friend over there, Representative Downey. Representative Downey, not only is the pink bar from those mineral royalties, but the blue bar is from those mineral royalties. The green bar is from those mineral royalties. It goes to all your school districts and school and kids, and then they go to the U, they get a scholarship. And after 125 years of mining, you got $1.1 billion, and we got $122 million. That's about, you know, a little over 10%, and you're trying to take half away in one fell swoop. But let me straighten you out, because you kind of got the concept, but you were using the Edina math. So Brother Eichela wouldn't like that. We didn't move. The Northwest Ordinance Act, Thomas Jefferson, the father of the Republican Party, believed in public education. And when every state became a state, after whenever it was passed in his term of presidency, each two sections in every township were to be used to raise money for public education. So your dots in the city went all the way from the Iowa border to the Canadian border. Every township had two sections. And those sections that were already eaten up because people started moving in when we were a territory got replaced. And yes, a lot of those lands are up north. Now, all of these bars are from royalties. The K-12 kids own these royalties. They own the ore because of that. The University of Minnesota, as a land-grant college, got 79,000, I believe it was, acres of land and the mineral rights. That's the royalties coming in off of there. In 1992, I diverted the money from here that was going to endow chairs and started a scholarship fund for all the kids of Minnesota. I made them name it the Iron Range Scholarships, so the kids in Edina and Osseo and Lanesboro would know that, like I'm trying to educate you today, the hard work we do. Okay? I mentioned it briefly. I'll say it again. This year, MINTAC will mine $22 million worth of royalties that happen to be owned by the school kids. MINTAC just purchased 8 40s for the farmers on the committee, 1,320 square feet. They're going to mine down, and each 40 is estimated to have 83 million tons of crude ore. And the state, the DNR negotiated, a monkey could have negotiated the contract, but the DNR did, and they got $1.66 a ton of crude. Now, it takes 3 tons of crude to make a ton of pellets. So over the next couple of decades, as we moved the road out of Parkville and picked up the people's homes, Dodo McGregor got his home moving business. He lifts up the garages, lifts up the houses, we move them. It's fun. Oh, it's great. You know, to get disrupted and moved because you're on mining company or, and they don't even own the surface rights, but they can kick you off your land. So they're moving the houses now as we speak. And they're going to move all the way down to, if you've been on the range, L&M Supply and that strip that's Virginia Mountain Iron as you go towards Hibbing, the mine is going to be within 400 feet of that highway. And over the next 2 decades, they're going to mine those 840s of school trust land, the kids' money. They're going to put $664 million more estimated into this fund in the next 2 decades. It's going to go to your kids. We'll get a little bit. Doug Johnson Fund get a little bit. It'll be great. The fund will get bigger. But now it'll be in half, cut in half. But yes, that's what it happens. All the land that you mentioned that got sold across the whole state has only produced 6% of the corpus of this fund. The rest of it came from iron ore royalties and a little bit from timber sales that the DNR didn't steal, like I've been trying to tell you people for 25 years, but you won't listen to me. Okay? So I want to emphasize something, though. Your map, it has to do with every bar here but this one.
because we don't get anything from the royalties. We took a little bit of the taconite tax and thought, if we're giving everybody else something every year, $29 million to the schools, $35 million to the university, $3 million in scholarships and growing every year because we're mining the ore, couldn't we have a little bit for ourselves? That's all we did. Now, Representative Anderson, what Representative Michaels, and he's got to be nonpartisan. Thank God I don't have to be, okay?
Mr. Michaels.
Mr.
Michael.
Did I call him governor? Oh, representative. Well, he should be governor.
President.
Yes. You know, you mentioned the other day that occupation tax doesn't pay as much money as the corporate income tax. I'm going to tell you something. I handed out a chart. Because as we mined that ore during the war, World War II, we mined 3 million tons of ore in this state since we started mining 125 years ago. We mined a billion of it during World War II. We'd all be speaking German or Japanese if it wasn't for the Iron Range. Rockefeller, the old man, said the Iron Range of Minnesota won two world wars. How many of you got a Carnegie Library? Raise your hand. How many of you got a Carnegie Library? You don't even know what a Carnegie Library is? They're in almost every town in the country. Look at, there they are. Andrew Carnegie owned the mineral rights. The Pillsbury's didn't make their money on flour. They all with flour. They owned the mineral rights. James J. Hill didn't make it on railroads. He owned the mineral rights in northern Minnesota. That's where they made their money. And we kept a little bit. And you guys now are taking it from us. Representative Anderson, I digress. Here, let's go back to this chart, because here's what happened. Joel is being too kind. Go to your chart here that you're using and look at that TEDF fund, and you'll see that in 92 it was 10.4 cents. When the tax escalated according to what the mines negotiated with the legislature, and it was based on the implicit price deflator and that, and they said, and we even changed it once for them, or former Senator Dinklage is nodding his head, we changed it because they didn't like it, and they were given, they thought they were paying too much, so we changed it twice to what they wanted. And so it escalated a couple years. We gave them money back and said, if you invest, and remember I said this on the floor, Mr. Chair, if you're going to cut corporate taxes, then get something out of it. So we gave them their property tax back if they would invest and match it from money out east. But what happened, you guys changed the funding formula for K-12 in 2001, and in 2001, LTV went down. And Dougie Johnson and Speaker Swigum then negotiated a deal, and a guy by the name of Tim Pawlenty. And it jumped to 33 cents from zero there. And then it went down to 22, because that was the year LTV shut down, went bankrupt, declared bankruptcy. We lost $13 million overnight in taxes, $13 million that were supposed to be paid to us that everybody anticipated, and it wasn't there because they declared bankruptcy. But that's the same year that, and I have to use Edina and Eden Prairie. Who's got Eden Prairie here? Anybody? Okay. Starting in 2002, because of the new formula for funding K-12, for the first time, businesses in Edina, if you compare apples to apples, got $4.1 million a year of property tax relief that they were paying for your K-12, because you weren't on the formula, and you weren't either. And in Eden Prairie, it's 4.6 a year. I got this from Mr. Michael. Every year. And yours probably too. So what we did is we took the 22 cents and added it to the 16 cents we were giving them in 2000, and we gave that every year to the mining companies but one. You have an anomaly in this handout, because it happens to be the year of 2009 taxes. So where it says 0.8 cents per ton in the last column, in every other year read 30, 31, 26, 31.6, and then you see that 1 year, 0.8, and that's because they only mine 17 million tons of ore, and the lie is if they go under 30 million a year, we didn't have to give them any of that rebate back. But we even gave them a little bit then, out of the goodness of our hearts, because we don't like to, you know, kick the goose that laid the golden egg too much, just a little bit once in a while. So that's what's going on here. We've passed that money right through. It didn't float. Theoretically, it flowed down to the Doug Johnson Fund, but it didn't, because we gave it back to the mining companies. We gave them hundreds of millions of dollars, and they matched it with money from Cleveland and from Pittsburgh. And if that's wrong, then I guess it's wrong. But that's where it came from. So every year, Representative Anderson, Edina gets businesses get $4.1 million, and Eden Prairie get $4.6 million. I just looked them up by chance. And so our businesses get 6.9, 6.7, 8.51. It's no different than what you're getting, but you're not going after Edina and Eden Prairie's property taxes. You're just going after ours. And it's not right. And Rep. Sim, Anderson, I have to, because you brought it up in Ways and Means, and I want to educate you. If you look at this chart I sent out, in 1956, 13% of all the state taxes, all the state taxes collected were paid by the occupation tax and a little more from the royalty tax. And that went on since 1921 when the constitutional amendment was passed that gave that occupation tax in our constitution and told how it should be distributed. We were giving money, like I said the other day, in Ways and Means. If you're a native Minnesotan, your grandparents or your great-grandparents or your parents got educated by the people of the range on the occupation tax. So why we have to get picked on, I really don't know. It's not right. You know, if you want to do a general tax to raise $60 million, then do it. Do it to everybody. But we don't deserve this. We've worked hard. We don't deserve after 125 years of mining. You know, my grandpa, both of my grandfathers came to this country to mine ore on the range. Tom Roccavina and Tom Mordini. And they probably started putting the money in this fund 100 years ago. And they put the money in this fund. And then my dad worked there, and he put the money in this fund. And I worked at Mintec, and I put the money in that fund. And so the little bit we put aside, you think somehow we're thieves? We are the most sharing, benevolent people in the state I have challenged. Oh, did I forget that we built a Capitol? Now, the Capitol was built based on the foreseen royalties coming. That's why we got one of the nicest capitals in the country. Otherwise, we would have had a Morton building. Especially if Polanyi was governor, because, but that's another story. So, everything from the capital of Minnesota to the school to the university, our work helped build. And you guys are just kicking us. It's not right. It isn't right, and not everyone at the table knows it's not right. And you can talk about what happened theoretically to money to get to the Doug Johnson Fund, but I just showed you, your business has got the same, and we just, that money came in, and it went out the other end, and we gave 33 cents basically a ton, except for that one last year, because we didn't have any money, and they didn't have to pay any taxes, hardly. So, members, you be the judge, but I really hope you support this amendment. Live within your means. We don't have a revenue problem. We have a spending problem, so don't spend it. Don't spend our money. Spend everybody's money. If you're going to spend money, spend everybody's money.
Mr. Chair?
I've got a list here. I'm ready to vote after... But Roccavina, you still have the floor.
Mr. Chair, I don't know what else to say. I'm keeping my blood pressure down. I got a little worked up in Ways and Means. I said if I die, I hope you would appropriate money for a life-size statue because it wouldn't be that expensive. I've had a stroke. And I would hope you could make it out of taconite. I don't want to get any of the Metro guys mad at me if it's made out of copper nickel. So just make it out of taconite. It won't cost much. Put in a bill.
Representative Roccavina, I will never have one for me because it would cost a lot. We have a whole bunch of folks I want to talk. Members, I'll go down the list. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in light of what Representative Roccavina has been recommending here, I would like to know from... Our esteemed chair here, $60 million, looking at the appropriations under deed, how would that affect our economy? What would that do about jobs? Can you
give us Representative Gonsler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, it would decimate deed. They would have to lay off 85% of the people who work there. They only have $77 million.
Representative Erickson.
Part of my committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Gunther, how about the dollars that flow to these various funds, I assume, to create jobs in the private sector? How about that loss? Could you...
Representative Gunther.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, those are generally pass-throughs, and they would continue to do that. They would probably have less oversight.
Representative Erickson.
No, that's fine.
I have Bisgins, Kiffmeyer, Downey, Anderson. Representative Bisgins.
Out of respect to the chair, I'll pass.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Bisgins. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Michael, I just have a couple questions for you. Number one is, who owns the school trust land?
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, that's a question I don't know the answer to, but I assume it's the state that owns it.
State.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the state owns the school trust land, the state meaning all the people of Minnesota through the state of Minnesota government process. The other question is, who owns the mineral rights for the state of Minnesota, Mr. Michael?
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, I believe it's the state, but I don't, you know, the state government, the state.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's my point. It is land owned by all the state of Minnesota, and whether it's a mineral rights or the school trust land, this is a ownership not specific to any one part of our state. It's a ownership by the state of Minnesota. That's, but I believe, what we've heard, and so it just stands to the thinking process that all would benefit fairly from the state ownership.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A quick question for staff, if I could. Is there anything that either Department of Revenue or House Research maintains that kind of keeps track of a balance of trade in terms of, you know, kind of the net ins and outs of property taxes and all of these many deals? Do we have any sense of communities that are net payers versus net receivers on the totality?
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, we, you know, Karen and Nina put out a report that's called Major State Aids and Taxes that on a county-by-county basis sort of calculates that balance of trade as you describe it. But we don't do, and there are assumptions that you have to make in making those calculations about where the taxes were paid from that, you know, may not reflect exact reality about where the people were that actually paid the taxes, but that's as close as we get to the county level. It would really be require some Herculean assumptions if you tried to go down to the city township type level, because there's a, you know, sort of a disconnect between where the taxpayers are who are paying the taxes and other than the income tax who are, you know, and the actual where the taxes are remitted when you think about the sales and corporate taxes and so forth.
Thank you.
Downey?
Mr. Chair, I just want to thank Representative Marquardt and Representative Rukavina. I think you have both raised a lot of really good points. I'm going to vote against your amendment, Representative Rukavina, but I think maybe there's some room to try and work together. I'd be glad to have some discussions between now and the floor, and no promises, certainly, but everybody's raised some really good points, so thank you.
And members of the committee, this discussion is not going to be done today. It will continue. Representative Anderson.
Okay.
Wrap it up, Representative Rukavina.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I just want to ask Representative Kiffmeyer what point she was trying to make, because I didn't really understand. I told you those funds belong to the school kids and to the university, the blue one, and to the green one, the University of Minnesota. And so, Representative Kiffmeyer, help this boneheaded ranger out. What point were you trying to make with your comments?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Mr. Michael answered it. He didn't say the school kids. He said the state of Minnesota.
Well, Mr.
Representative Rukavina.
Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer.
It's for the benefit of the school kids.
That's right. Do you have the handout?
Representative Kiffmeyer has the floor.
Representative Kiffmeyer? Representative Kiffmeyer.
Representative Kiffmeyer, did you get the handout?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was waiting just to be sure out of courtesy you, to you, the Chair. Before answering, yes, I do. Okay.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This yellow and red or whatever color it is, kind of red or orange, has nothing to do with state royalties. It has nothing to do with the school kids owning the land. It has nothing to do with the university. It is a fund we set up because we never owned the mineral rights. The mining company also owns a lot of mineral rights. There's a company from Texas that an individual who is so wealthy, he bought all of the mineral rights from United States Steel, not just in Minnesota, coal royalties and everything else. The name of the company is RGGS. Evlithack and I, where we're talking about moving the major highway to Canada in the next few years, is paying RGGS. They own the royalties. The Yaki family that I think owns the Boston Red Sox, Representative Kiffmeyer, owns royalties. They get the money in their own pockets. So, again, please explain to me what point you were trying to make, because I don't know what that has to do with the $60 million. I admit, I wanted to educate you. We mine the ore. We live and survive with the ups and downs. Our main streets from Coleraine to Ely, except Ely looks a little better because they get my local property tax money from the mines. But because of the way the distribution formula, but you guys don't even want me to get into that. Our towns mostly they look like we were in a war. Like there was a war going on there. There's holes in our main streets because we didn't get to keep any little mineral wealth. Every year you get money out of here, Representative Kiffmeyer, St. Cloud or wherever you're from. Tell me your school districts. I'll tell you how much you get. Tell me which school districts have. I'll tell you how many kids you got getting a scholarship because I set that fund up for you, not for me. But what point are you making? This has nothing to do with these other three funds or who owns mineral rights or if the state owns mineral rights or if the University of Minnesota owns mineral rights. That's what I'm trying to tell you. It has nothing to do with it. It's a fund of local property taxes that we were smart enough to keep for ourselves because mining is an extraction. Representative Kiffmeyer, it's not cute or funny what's going on here. I know you don't mean it to be, but I don't know what your point was. Mr. Michaels explained to you that this year the mining companies are only, they're mining 39 million tons of ore and paying on 31. They're paying $18 million less than they did the year before, and they're going to pay that $18 million less for 3 years. Which one of your property taxpayers in a CI, and I don't care if it's in Eden Prairie or Edina, pays less money if they didn't have the business making money that year? Nobody does that. It's an extraction. The money comes out of the earth, or the ore comes out. It goes to the lower Great Lakes. It makes skyscrapers and battleships. And the state gets a little bit of it, and we get a little bit of it. But it's gone forever, Representative Kiffmeyer. And that's why these endowments were set up. And that's why we set a little one up for ourselves. Because someday all we're going to have is beautiful holes in the ground and beautiful waste stockpiles next to them. And no wealth like we mined for 125 years. That's why we set the fund up, so we could use the interest. We don't spend the corpus. Very rarely. We spent some of the corpus starting Masaba Nugget, but very rarely have we spent it. And so I don't know what point you were trying to make, but I think you misunderstood what this last bar is all about. That's what's in the bill. That's what I'm trying to educate you on. It has nothing to do with owning royalties or school kids owning them or universities owning them. It has nothing to do with that. It's a property tax diverted to this little fund. That's what it is. And you're taking half of it, and it's not right, Mr. Chair.
Okay, seeing no further discussion, we will...
Mr. Chair, are you going to be fair? Is your hearing okay?
My hearing's very good.
Okay, well then... I'll trust you on
it. Whatever you'd like.
I want a roll call because I think you're going to rule in my favor, so go ahead.
I'll do the best I can.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to clarify.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Rukavina, my smile is only because I wasn't intending to have you have to go through another blood pressure attack. I just apologize. Mm-hmm. Just we'll talk some more later, okay? It'll be okay. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, with that, Representative Rukavina renews his motion on the A23 amendment as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The chair is in doubt. The chair will, I guess I got to rule on first. The motion does not prevail. I'll ask for division or show of hands. All of those in favor, please raise your hand. Thank you, members. All opposed, please raise your hand. One hand. Okay, you can put your hands down. There being 12 ayes and 15 nays, the motion does not prevail. Amendment next. Seeing no further amendments, yes, Representative Lencheski.
I do have amendments. Mr. Chair, I'm still hoping we can have questions on the Angel credit.
Absolutely.
But I do have, I'm just trying to look, I have an A2 amendment.
The pages could please pass out the A2 amendment.
Actually, the A1, I'm sorry, A1.
Excuse me, the A1 amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Chair Gunther.
At one point, Representative Murphy would like to speak on Representative Rukavina's amendment.
Mine.
Past that, but if Representative Murphy would like to make a few comments, we will certainly allow that.
My amendment. On my amendment.
Oh, on your amendment? Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy, I believe it's to the A1 amendment you'd like to visit with us about. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, I don't have an amendment.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Lencheski?
Yes, I think the pages can give Representative Murphy the A1. And the A1, Mr. Chair, and Representative Murphy, so you know which one we're working on here, this reinstates the stricken language that reinstates the carve-out and the grant for the $446,000 in the general fund, and it makes the cancellation of these Region 3 grants temporary. So I think Representative Murphy and Representative Ansel, this affects their area, and this also did not come up in the Ways and Means meeting. It's another tax item, and I think they're waiting to see the A1.
Certainly. What we will do is Representative Lencheski moves the S0887 A1 amendment to the bill before us. Before I would like Representative Murphy and Ansels to have a chance to read the amendment. I'd also like Representative Gunther, if you could make some comments on it first, and then we will hear from the two members at the table. Representative Gunther?
I pulled the press ball. Could not put it in the bill. Couldn't put it in the bill.
Yeah.
Government? No, minerals.
Yeah.
Representative Gunther, if you could make a few comments, or do you want to look at it a little further? Or?
Basically, don't really have a lot to say about it. I think what they're basically asking for is that the Doug Johnson Fund be increased by this amount of money during these years. Is that correct?
No. Mr. Michael?
Occupation.
Coaching Carlton.
Coaching Carlton.
Or who could answer? Representative Murphy, please state your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, I'm Representative Mary Murphy. I'm not a ranger, but I represent St. Louis County, and today I'm here representing Carlton County. In the last century, I represented areas that were in the IRRRB, Taconite Relief District, in this century I have not represented that area. But the area cannot be split and divided. And what I'm here to talk to you about is another history lesson that goes back to 1979. And the amendment that Representative Lencheski has introduced talks about those beginnings. And Representative Gunther, I haven't spoken to him about the amendment. And Representative Davids, I haven't spoken to you. And therefore, I'm uncomfortable speaking directly to the amendment, but I do want to give the history lesson. Representative Davids, Representative Gunther, you are friends. You are leaders. I recognize the obligations and responsibilities that you hold as chair. I have held them. And I know what it's like to have to come out with a target, to have a target and to meet it. And when I first talked with Representative Gunther, it was late last week, and said, "You can't take my money." And of course it's not my money. It's money that's the state of Minnesota's money that's been going to Carleton County. And it's still not clear to many people where the money came from or where it's going or what's been done. And I think we have to talk about it. I have to clarify the background of it. Maybe for Representative Gunther to get to the floor, he needs that money. But the language that's being struck is very important to the economic development of Carleton County. When the money started out, it was from the tax night money or from the occupational money. And it's funded through the IRRRB. In the 1980s, I believe it was, the late 80s, the money started coming out of the general fund, but was still funded, or still delivered through the IRRRB. And as I said at the beginning, it's hard to split the areas because miners' families don't stop just in St. Louis County or Itasca County or Kuchiching County. They're all over northern Minnesota. Miners are. But there's another industry that's just as volatile up there as the mines, and that's the timber industry and the lumberjacks and the paper companies. And when Irv Anderson became majority leader, he was from Kuchiching County, where Representative Enzel is from now. And Representative Anderson approached me and said, "We have to tie our counties with St. Louis and Itasca, Lake and Cook, because our economy depends on their economy." And we did it by a tax that was much more important in the 1970s than today. It was a huge and ponderous machinery tax. And after my first conversation with Representative Anderson, I raced back to my office to look in the dictionary to see what the dictionary said was ponderous. Because he kept talking about this huge and ponderous machinery tax that was quite a bit larger in those days than it is today, evidently. And because Coochin County and Carlton County, along with the mining counties, had lots of huge and ponderous machinery. And the definition that went into the money that came to Carlton and Coochin County for economic development purposes was based on huge and ponderous machineries that ran our paper mills. Representative Anselk, Representative Anderson had the Boise, and at the time I had Northwest Paper in Cloquet, which became Potlatch, which became today's Sappy. And we still have huge and ponderous machinery. But it's not as ponderous as it used to be because some of it's electronic now. But that was the roots of this economic development money. I don't think it was ever over $600,000 that the two counties shared. This year it's $446,000 being proposed.
Excuse me, Representative Murphy, and you will certainly get more time here, but Chair Gunther would like to address something here. If we could maybe move this along, but you still have, we'll go back to you.
Mr. Chairman, I have no objection to this. It's going to be on the tails, and I would prefer addressing it on the floor if possible.
So what you're saying is if this amendment would not be put on, you could work with Representative Murphy and Representative Anselk on this issue to try and come to some resolution.
That's exactly right.
That's what you're saying?
That's correct.
Representative Murphy, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy, I'm certainly not going to cut you off because I sit too close to you on the House floor, and that would be very...
It's such good practice.
That would not be very wise on my behalf because you know where I live. But with that being said, if we could move things along and Representative Anselk and Murphy could work with Representative Gunther to try to resolve this, by the time
my
you call the floor,
desire, Mr. Chair.
But I'm not cutting you off because I'm not real bright, but my father did call me son, and I know that wouldn't be wise.
Mr. Chair, if there's any questions about the economic development money and how many jobs and how the money is used by Carlton County or by Coochin County, Representative Anselk and I would be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions for, and for the record, Representative Anselk says we're fortunate to have him join us here today, too. Any questions for Representative Murphy or Representative Anselk on this issue? Representative Anselk, if you could make a statement.
Mr. Chairman and members, very, very briefly. In essence, Carlton County and Coochin County are sharing a carve-out of the occupation tax. No. And in Coochin County's standpoint, about a half of their carve-out is used for economic development activities in this very, very remote, job-dependent county like most in rural Minnesota in the north. And the other half of this carve-out is used for municipal solid waste disposal. Coochin County does not have a landfill. Coochin County does not have a way of disposing with its garbage, its household garbage. And all of its garbage is trucked to a landfill in Kitson County. And if it weren't for this carve-out, these carve-out dollars, that would not happen. So
thank you, Representative Anselk. Any questions for Representative Murphy or Anselk? With that, Representative Lencheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. It sounds like the best thing is to withdraw the A1 right now. I'm just wondering, and I'll do that, withdraw the A1. Mr. Chair, is your intention not the same on the A2 then? If I'm understanding you correctly.
Representative Lencheski withdraws the A1 amendment. As long as we have the two reps here, if you could describe briefly what the A2 is trying to do, and then I'll go to Chair Gunther.
I'll form.
We don't have the A2, but if you could just briefly describe what we're trying to do with it.
Well, the A2 is for 12 and 13 only, and it reduces the amount of the occupation tax, again, for Region 3 by half, and it makes up the target as the same way it was doing in the A1. And so if I'm understanding the discussions between Chair Gunther and Representative Anzels and Representative Murphy, I think his comments were intended to try to address all these amendments, so I don't think it's, or A1 and A2, so I don't think it's necessary to move it.
Chair Gunther.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Lincheski, we will get together and iron these things out.
Representative Murphy and Anzels?
It's fine with me, Mr. Good. Chair.
Okay. Representative Lincheski withdraws the H. Oh, it's never offered. Kind of hard to withdraw something that's never offered. Okay. But won't be offering it, we'll say. Okay. Any other amendments before the committee on House File 88? I'm sorry. Senate File 887. Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for all of your patience, and I hope, you know, I somewhat educated you. Representative Gunther,
thank you, Representative Murphy and Anzels. Thank you very much. Representative Rukavina.
Representative Gunther, will you work with me before this bill comes to the floor again to try to do something with this? I mean, you're going to work with Murphy and Anzels, and I'm chopped liver, I guess. I don't know. You know.
Representative Gunther, is he chopped liver?
Absolutely not. He's a good friend, and I certainly will do all I can to work with you.
Because I got an idea.
I'm looking forward to
it. I can see Edina is no longer a city. Or is Downey when you need him? Okay, Representative Rukavina, you have the floor, sir.
No, Mr. Chair, that's all, because, you know, I think I could see on the faces of everyone at this table that most don't think what we're doing is right. And so if we need to pick up revenue, because we do have a revenue problem here in this bill, then we should pick it up fairly, and that's all I'm asking. And, you know, members, if you look at this distribution formula, I do have to say something. Representative Murphy, you know, there are 3,564 miners left in the state of Minnesota. There used to be 15,000 when I worked at MinTac. And we still almost mine the same amount of ore because we have trucks and shovels that are three times the size of when I worked there. But, you know, 41% of that number, I think it's 1,400 some, live in my district, and another 29% in Representative Moline's district. Basically, Senator Tomasoni's Senate district has 70% of the taconite miners and produces 85% of the taconite tax. And these formulas are kind of absurd and ridiculous. But you know what? I'm not going to do to my friends what is being done to my constituents. I've continued to share with them. St. Louis County School District gets way more money than Mountain Iron Buell, and Mountain Iron Buell produces all the taxes. There's formulas in here made up by Doug Johnson that are absolutely absurd, but I'm not going to change them because if I do, I hurt my friends. But a lot of this money is leaving where it came from and going to help other people with wealthier property wealth districts. And so I'm just kind of taking a hit everywhere I turn and look. And it's not fair because those 70% of those 3,564 miners live in me and Carly's district, and they work hard and they suffer during bad times. And yeah, they make a little bit of money during good times, but we never know when the bad times are around the corner. And that's why we put that money aside. And members, I need your help on this. It's not right. So I'm going to work with Representative Gunther and see what we can do by the time this bill comes up to the floor.
Members, I have an amendment. It's an oral. Thank you, Representative Rukavina. I have an oral amendment. The chair makes an oral amendment to delete on page 16, section 2, on page 17, section 3, on page 19, section 4. And members, what that's doing, that's getting the angel investment tax credit out of the bill. Any discussion? Representative Lincheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have that identical amendment. That's would be the A24, and I really appreciate it. You know, Member Chair, if I can, or Mr. Chair, if I can just comment, because I think if this prevails, other than the Doug Johnson money, there's almost no tax items in there, and I will just say that, just to be clear, Representative Downey and Dabney and Mahoney worked very hard on the angel investment tax credit for a long time. And they know that I was not a fan. But I ended up being the chief author of the bill and carrying the bill through the process. And as the deed folks here know, it was really the insistence of the tax committee that the tax committee deal with the tax credit that made arguably, the angel investment tax credit in Minnesota, arguably the best angel investment credit there is now in the nation, due to a number of components, transferability, refundability, items like that, that of course was not contemplated by the folks working out of deed. I think in general, deed's looking for ways to do economic development, but the tax folks know how to write tax bills. And in fact, the changes that are now coming forth from deed, and I believe this was a Mahoney bill that unfortunately never came to taxes, were actually suggested by tax staff to deed and rejected by deed. And had deed and the advocates of this credit listened a little harder, they would not have these problems they have right now. There were many, many problems in the initial drafting of what the angel advocates wanted that were improved upon after many, many meetings with Representative Mahoney and Representative Dabney and the deed and the Department of Revenue and the House Research Tax staff. And so through many meetings, the angel investment tax credit got a lot better and is now in a much better situation in Minnesota. The item that was raised in testimony here earlier with Mr. Nelson was in fact suggested by me and rejected by the advocates. They're now coming back and saying, well, that was a good idea. We maybe should have done that. That was the $2.4 million problem that was turned down in the negotiations to try to get the angel credit signed. So I think these are the purviews of the tax committee, and I think there is not a problem in what's in the bill that might need to be addressed, but it is a tax item and it belongs in Chair David's committee, and so I strongly support your motion. I think it goes a long way to get this item out of a bill that is and cleans up your bill. Just all that'll be left is the Doug Johnson item, but I appreciate your motion, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lencheski. We are making progress here, and I need to restate my oral amendment so it's clear, and then I'll go to Chair Gunther. We would delete the oral amendment would be to delete on page 16, section 2, page 17, section 3, page 19, section 4, renumber the sections, and amend the title accordingly. Chair Gunther.
That's it. Mr. Chairman and Representative Lencheski, I just got an individual income tax, angel investment tax credit has no general fund implications all the way through 2015. That's from the Department of Revenue. So I think it really is going the right way. It doesn't spend any general fund money. It is something that Representative Mahoney put forth and is very much involved in. And it also is something that I believe the governor approves and desires.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all fair say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Item next. With that, I said that I would then go to discussion. Oh, excuse me, any other amendments?
Mr. Chair, I do have other amendments, and I will tell you that the problem remains. We're making a lot of progress, but it's still a tax bill as long as the property tax changes remain in the bill. I won't offer them. There are a number of them related to other tax items I think we should be addressing if we're going to start looking at economic development tax issues. That's where we've always done them. So I have some jobs-y amendments, which was the purview of this committee, even though it's deed and the economic development who likes jobs-y, and R&D credits and some other amendments I have, which is the purview of this committee. But deed and members who serve on Representative Gunther's committee always like to try to get them through. And this is not to Chair Gunther. This happens bipartisanly all the time. So I won't offer them. I'm going to hope that the last tax item leaves the bill before the floor, and you know I can offer them on the floor then if we still have tax items. So I have no amendments. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Chair Gunther will certainly work with members on each issue as he always has. Any further discussion? Hearing none. I will. Representative Carlson.
Are you about ready to vote on the bill? Or?
Yes, sir. I think we are. I don't know.
I had earlier gave a little signal about a question I had procedurally.
Yes, sir.
And, you know, the history of bills that would come to this committee that had a fiscal impact in the end, they would go to Ways and Means. Now, one of the roles of Ways and Means is to certify that a bill is within its budget targets. Now, I didn't raise this question on House File 130, if you recall, because we didn't have a budget resolution at that point. It was early in the session. We do now, and we know that the bottom line hasn't changed. But the rule, I'll just read it. It's a very short paragraph. After the adoption of a resolution by the Committee on Ways...
Mr. Representative Carlson, where are you? And please speak to the microphone,
I'm on
please.
Page 18. And it's rule...
microphone, please.
I'll use this one over here. It's a little easier to talk because I like the face of the person I'm talking to. I guess. It's on page 18 of the rules, and under section G, let's see, that would be rule 4.03. And so going back, I said earlier that I didn't raise the question on House File 130 because we weren't operating under a budget resolution. We are now. And the role of Ways and Means is to review a bill to make sure that it is within its target. And then the chair of Ways and Means certifies that the bill is within its target. Now, normally this procedure is pretty routine because the bills would come out of taxes, go to Ways and Means, they would pass out of taxes, and I did a little research on this because I was going to raise the question today. Used to actually be printed, the certification actually used to be printed in the journal. It's no longer printed in the journal, but the real rule still provides that it has to be certified, and it's very clear if you look and read G, if you've got it there, that it's not the chair of taxes that certifies it, it is the chair of Ways and Means that certifies it. Another, if you turn to page 20 and rule 4.10, and this is what I mentioned to you earlier, but you wanted to move along, so I didn't want to get that heavily into the discussion. But the second sentence under C says a bill reported by the Committee on Taxes containing a substantial fiscal impact, which obviously this bill does, must be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. So the first sentence there says if it deals with any tax issues, it has to come here. Then it says it has to go to Ways and Means. Then if you look at the previous rule, it says that it has to be certified, and not by the chair of the Committee on Taxes, but by the chair of Ways and Means. Now, that certification is no longer printed in the journal. One could argue that that certification takes place then by the final action of Ways and Means. I can make a motion to re-refer this to Ways and Means. I understand you're operating under a timeline that you'd like to get this bill out, so I suspect that that would be voted down. But I do want to point out to the committee what the rule is. And I, quite frankly, and I've mentioned this before, I think what the rule is. And I, quite frankly, and I've mentioned this before, I think a lot of the headaches that we've been dealing with bills not being referred to taxes, could have been resolved simply by giving direction to the finance chairs. The directions that we had and that I worked with Representative Lincheski on was to make sure that anything that had a tax implication that came out of a finance committee or the finance committee was then re-referred to taxes. And then the tax committee would re-refer to Ways and Means. And so we're a little bit upside down here, if you will, by having bills that are now coming from Ways and Means to taxes, and then the desire to have them go to the House floor. Because I ask, how does the certification take place? Because the bill is no longer in possession of the Ways and Means Committee once it's here. And had we realized that we were going to be operating a little differently than we had in the past in terms of bills being re-referred from Ways and Means to taxes, that rule probably, when we were adopting rules, should have been changed to reflect the way you're currently operating, but the rule doesn't reflect that. So I'm not going to make a motion here. I may raise this question on the House floor as to whether this has been properly certified or not, and maybe get a ruling from the speaker at that point. So I'll just stop here, and maybe you have a comment, Chair Davids. It could easily be resolved if you re
if you re-referred it to Ways and Means. I know that she's indicated she doesn't want to hear it when she referred it here anymore, but the rule doesn't say that you can just sort of waive that, in my view. You have to certify. That's the whole purpose of the budget resolution, in part, or the, and the reason that it's the final stop is a certification.
Thank you for your points, Representative Carlson, and my motion will stand as is, and for several reasons, and I can give you lots of reasons. Ways and Means Committee Chair can still certify, can still do that, doesn't have to go back. I could have my top 10 list of reasons here, but I'll start with, that'll be number three. Number two will be there has to have been substantial changes, and we basically left the Douglas Johnson Fund exactly as is. But rule number one, why my motion will stand, is because we checked with the chief clerk and he said it didn't have to go back to Ways and Means. That's my rule number one, and you can certainly bring it up and so forth.
And my, being that we're talking about checking, my minimal research, Mr. Chairman, was that it's a gray area. And that's why I pointed out that I think that the rules have to address then, if this is going to become the routine procedure, then the rule has to be adjusted.
And Representative
I don't really think it's leaving here being certified, but that's my take on it. You have a different take, but the whole issue would be resolved, and of course we're down the road now with the finance committees, but the whole issue can be resolved next year in terms of whether it's a gray area or not by simply having the finance chairs understand if they have a bill with any tax ramifications, it's got to go to taxes and then Ways and Means. Then any gray area with this is totally removed.
Your point's very well taken, Representative Carlson. Representative Biskins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, you and I sit right next to each other in Ways and Means, and it is the practice of the chair of the Committee of Ways and Means when a finance bill comes up, she asks two questions of the author of the bills. Number one, she asks, is the bill within the House budget targets as whatever our resolution is? She asks that question, and the chair responds, and I do believe the chair of this committee responded, and that's the certification. And that's been her practice on all budget bills, and she did that on this bill. Now, Mr. Chairman, a question of you. Has any action in this committee created a situation where this bill is now out of its target?
If I could please bring Mr. Soderberg down, and I will have you address that question, Mr. Soderberg. I mean, this is very important. What Representative Carlson has brought up is very important. please state your name, who represents for the record, please, sir.
Ron Soderberg with House Fiscal. The question is,
did you hear the Biskins question?
Yes, I did. There hasn't been anything that affected the target or the bills being within target. It isn't within target.
Representative Biskins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then I do believe this bill has been certified by the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee.
And okay, with that, I'll renew my
chairman,
motion.
Just
I'm sorry. Representative Lincheski, you have the floor next. Then I'll go to Representative Carlson. Representative Lincheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, members, I know some of this gets frustrating and tedious, and I just really genuinely want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for taking the time for everyone to think out loud about this because, you know, this is my ninth year in the minority. I've mostly been in the minority here. I understand the role of minority. I understand the role of majority. But the rules exist to tell both sides what are the rules. So the rules really matter. It gets a little dry. But I always found when people discuss the rules, you learn a lot if you pay attention. And it empowers you to use the rules to make the best possible argument in the situation you're in. And so I thank you for the discussion. I really want to thank Representative Carlson, who has... You know, we're fortunate we have some members here, and Representative David, you're one as well, who've served under various rules. And I've served under various rules. For example, this year your majority removed the gag rule, which was excellent. As a minority member on a roll call or majority, when we voted for that, I opposed it. I never liked it. I didn't think we should have it. It was divided bipartisanly. And so rules really matter, and all legislators need to understand them and learn them. And I love that Representative Bills keeps looking at them because that really makes a good legislator when you understand the rules. So I know it gets tedious, but we really do need to understand how the new majority is functioning. And I do, I have had the impression that some of the items with the tax bills is really not you, Mr. Chair. And I hope that you will see in the end, it's the minority kind of squawking about what our tax bill is doing out in other areas that actually empowers your committee, at which you hold the gavel for. And I think we just all want to keep working for that together, and that everybody should be able to see that over time, that no matter who's running the legislature, tax bills sit in the tax committee. They don't get carried around in other committees. I think that we've now, Representative Carlson's work has shown us that there is a gray area here. It looks like he's not calling for a roll call, on the other hand, and I think Representative Biskins was right to say the spreadsheet didn't change. However, I did hear Representative Gunther say that he's going to work with Representative Murphy and Ann Zelson. We kind of don't know what that means yet, and so, you know, I think that you know, looking to see Chair Holberg certify means something, and it means something to the entire legislature, and we understand there's a learning curve going on here as roles change, and so I really think it's a time when people can be bipartisan, even though it's uncomfortable, is to actually think out loud about the rules. And I think it's always a good day when the committee is holding the yellow book in their hands, and you can see a lot of people are doing that now in this room, whether it's staff people or people in the audience or members, and that makes us all stronger. But we do need to follow the rules, and I appreciate the discussion. It looks like Chair our former Ways and Means Chair isn't going to push this to a roll call right now. Maybe
Finance
he is.
Chair, not Ways and Means.
Finance. You know, we had that bifurcation that you've also fixed that, too. which I appreciate that, too. So, anyway, genuinely, you know, we have a long row to hoe here. We know that it's almost April now, tomorrow, or whenever it is. And so the first 3 months of the session's gone, and we have two to go, and the two are going to seem like 2 years. So we do have to all get on the same page on the rules so that when we just have the debate, we can stay on the issues and off the rules. And I just really appreciate you spending the time on it, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. And Mr. Lichesky, Representative Carlson?
If I would have wanted to push it further, I would have made a motion knowing what the outcome of the motion would have been, but that wasn't the main reason. I just wanted to raise the issue, but I do want to respond just briefly to Representative Biskins. I don't think simply asking the question in Ways and Means, because certification is more than that, and it says it must be certified to the House. And that's why we used to have that formal procedure in place where the certification was actually printed in the journal. I asked when that changed, and they thought it probably changed during the chairmanship of Representative Solberg, where they stopped printing it in the journal. But that the rule was not changed. So you might argue then that it's the action of the committee that certifies it and when the report hits the House floor. But like I say, this could easily be resolved even under the current rules by making sure the tax bills come here before they go to Ways and Means, and then
Thank you. Representative Carlson, your point's very well taken. I'll go to Representative Biskins.
Well, I thank you. Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, if it's the actions of the committee passed the bill. The committee passed the bill to the Committee on Taxes. Therefore, the committee has certified. If Representative Solberg had another way to certify it, I'm sure we'd be willing to learn. And if there was a form he sent, if there was something in writing, that's fine. We're willing to learn. But I don't think we're doing anything different than Representative. So the order may be different, but the certification, if the action of the committee is the certification, the committee acted and it passed the bill.
Every ranger.
Mr. Chairman, just very quickly, I said one could argue. I didn't say that was. I said you could argue that point, but that doesn't necessarily mean it fits the rule.
Representative Runbeck, and then we're going to go to a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just on a whole different subject, really enjoyed the conversation about the taconite area. The tax committee does not ever get to take field trips, and I just wanted to, ask if Representative Rukavina, pick a date, and those of us who want to come. Right. But I'd like,
Run back.
Mr. Chair, how about a bigger group? Will you host a tour? Will you take us on a tour and pick a date to tour some of the mines up there?
Representative Runbeck, before I go to Representative Rukovina, I would simply state that Representative Rukovina, I've been to the range several times. I've been to your house, and I've been to your parents' house. God rest their souls. They're very, very gracious. I think that's a very good idea. We'll certainly want to look at. And the tours were very fascinating. I mean, I had no idea what how that whole iron range works, and I still can't explain it, but it was fascinating. It was fascinating. Representative Rukovina.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, you know, regardless of our politics, you and I can see eye to eye all of that. And, you know, so I'd certainly like you to be my date. But anyway, once upon a time, about a few years back, Representative Lincheski and Hillstrom and Dietrich came to my house right before Christmas. I called it the girls' weekend. But anyway, and we took them on a tour of the smallest mine. And they got a taste. We went, you know, we went and had fun. We went shopping in Ely. We went bar hopping. Oh, it was a blast. And yeah, and as we were coming out of the pit at Minorca, remember this? A timber wolf came. And so, you know, when I hear the stories about how mining upsets everything, you know, it's not true. But Timberwolf actually hid behind a little popple tree and looked at Representative Lincheski. She blew it a kiss, I think. And anyhow, they were just so excited. But, yes. But we want, I would love to have the tax committee. The only problem is now they have a new rule at U.S. Steel's biggest plant at Mountain Iron. And even if you're not going into the mine, they make you give them their Social Security number. So, like Representative Biskins and I won't give them my Social Security number. So I haven't been back to that mine since because I'm kind of paranoid about that stuff.
Representative Rukovina, I can see an amendment coming for the floor. with that, I will renew my motion that we pass the unofficial engrossment of Senate File Number 887 as amended to the floor. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Members, the next meeting will be at the call of the chair. You'll be notified. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.